Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
You know, Maria, I sometimes wonder if we'll ever discover the meaning of it all, working in a place like this.
Oh, I've worked in worse places, philosophically speaking.
Really, Maria?
Yes. I used to work in the Académie Française, but it didn't do me any good at all. And I once worked in the library in the Prado in Madrid, but it didn't teach me nothing, I recall. And the Library of Congress, you'd have thought, would hold some key, but it didn't. And neither did the Bodleian Library. In the British Museum, I hoped to find some clue. I worked there from 9 to 6, read every volume through, but it didn't teach me nothing about life's mystery. I just kept getting older, and it got more difficult to see. Till eventually my eyes went, then my arthritis got bad. So now I'm cleaning up in here. But I can't be really sad. Because, you see, I feel that life's a game. You sometimes win or lose. And though I may be down right now, at least I don't work for Jews.
I'm so sorry. I had no idea we had a racist working here. I apologize most sincerely.
After the hour of one, and this is the month of May in the year of our Lord 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of this, the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, like a large looming thing. Thank you for joining us. It is Monday, May 23rd, 2011, and welcome to day 12. If you would like to be part of today's program, it is 503-505-6969. We seem to be experiencing something of a telephone renaissance lately. The last few days, I think it's just that people have figured out that they can pester us. I mean, communicate with us directly.
Maybe they were scared.
Maybe they were afeared of our love, Dawn.
I know that if I was listening to a show, I would probably prefer to text or email because you know, you and I, we are quick with the wit. You know, if they don't keep up, they get mocked and derided. Of course, if they do keep up, they are celebrated and admired by many. But that's the chance they take.
What? I just thought you meant because they were antisocial, like jerks or something.
Oh, no.
Because we're antisocial jerks. And so when you were saying, like us, and then you went into some long sort of flowery thing that I lost about halfway through. I just thought you meant because I just prefer to sit at home covered in Cheeto crumbs, not interacting with other human beings. And so, therefore, you were saying that by extension, if the audience were like us, that they would be like that.
It also means that the audience may be like us in that they're something of control freaks. So if you text or you email, you get a chance to sort of edit what you're saying before you send it. You have more control that way.
Whereas if you call, it's just out there. Once it leaves your mouth, I mean, there's no control over it.
And we might ask you something, and you'll just be going, I don't know what to say now.
Then you bring shame upon the house of Euripides. You know, you got kind of a quavery old woman voice going on over there.
Yeah, I'm not sure what... Well,
kind of a pepper pot sort of a thing happening.
Well, I just had this whole thing with, you know... I'm all a flutter because I was hanging out with Scott Landreville.
He does have that effect.
He does. He's a fine... fine scruffy silver fox of a man.
I was going to say that the silver fox Yes, he's Rommel. No, he was the desert fox. I was going to say that I myself was going to say that I had the vapors, but that's just gas, right? What is it that the women got like in ye olden days when they weren't, you know, turned on? They were
glistening? Glistening is sweating.
And vapors is just flatulence.
No, the vapors is when you're sort of woozy. Probably because your corset is too tight.
What's gas?
Well, no one ever talked about gas.
You didn't have
no.
That. No, there was because you didn't. Women
gas
didn't
was
even,
for farm animals in the lower order.
Women didn't even. They really didn't even. They didn't really even invent and perfect the female anus until 1972.
Yes women. Women. That's why women glisten. Women don't sweat.
No,
they don't break wind.
Just exuded it from your pores.
Yes, they do not poop.
Like pink sawdust.
Right.
Hey, here's a question for. You know, it's been a while since we've done Pop Culture Authority, which has been busy with so much of the crap, and they're sort of stacking up. I don't even know that this is Pop Culture Authority. I suppose it is. But here's the thing that I'm wondering about. What exactly is in that pink crap that the school janitor always sprinkled on vomit? I mean, there was, like, sawdust, but then occasionally they would use the actual, like pink stuff that came in a... And it was, like, a sort of sawdusty, sort of powdery, like, shredded sort of something or other.
It was probably sawdust... Because the sawdust would soak up the liquid stuff.
Yes.
Make it easier to clean up. There was probably some kind of deodorizing agent in there as well.
Or like a sawdust that was, yeah. I don't know, it was some sort of candy coating of Lysol and bleach or something.
Yeah.
Or?
And I wonder if they colored it pink so that you would see it and know it was there and avoid it. Sort of like I always wondered why they color the seed coating that they spray and the fertilizer that they spray all over the hillsides.
I think that is so you'll that, yeah so you'll.
I thought it was sort of to fool you into oh look something's growing but it's a really artificial color. And then I saw them do it on Dirty Jobs and really partly yes it's green looks more natural on a hillside but mostly it's so the guys who are spraying it can see where they've sprayed.
Yeah no it's just a marking agent.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's one of those things where sawdust did the job, but then it's, you know, but anything that nature can do, science can do better.
Okay.
And so they marketed something that was, you know, you're not using plain old sawdust on that vomit, are you? And then they marketed some world of tomorrow, like...
Use vomit be gone.
Seriously, yeah, the puke away, the sort of like the tang to the sawdust orange juice. That's just a theory. I don't really know the answer to that. All right, I'm going to make a note to look it up one of these days. Here's the thing I figured out this weekend. And by say figured out, I mean I watched my wife do it. You know what I did not realize? That if you, let's say, theoretically were to spill a large glass of red wine onto yourself and then also onto the sofa, mm-hmm. I did not know that if you pour salt into the red wine, that actually helps to lift it off the couch.
Hmm. I didn't know that either.
Yeah, you pour salt into it. And so here's the thing. Because the salt serves the same function as the sawdust does in the vomit. It actually, salt absorbs... It sort of absorbs water, which I guess I sort of knew. Because that's why, like, if you're, you know, floating around in a life raft in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, you probably don't want to drink a lot of salt. But yeah, so she spilled all this red wine on the sofa, poured a bunch of salt on it, gave it like 30 seconds, scooped the salt off the couch into a paper towel, and there was very, very little red wine there left to be taken out. So it just sort of went, and it just siphoned all up, and then the salt just absorbed it, and it became sort of a one contiguous mash she was able to pick up.
I'd always heard that if you, that to get red wine out of something, pouring white wine on it first, like immediately, because I guess it's similar, but it will dilute it a bit, so it's not as strong. And then there's the whole, you know, club soda thing.
But then you're just making the couch twice as soggy, it seems
yeah,
like. That's why you want to do that.
But you want to dilute the redness, though, I guess. I don't know.
Somebody's saying that this is something they did on Curb Your Enthusiasm, apparently, where they did talk about using salt, which I don't think she got it from there, but apparently it's one of those things that has now entered the cultural consciousness. It's a hint from Heloise that was previously unknown to us.
Like putting your dunked phone into rice. Everybody seems to know about that now, and nobody knew.
Your
about
what into what?
Oh, maybe everybody doesn't know about it. If you douse your phone, if you drop your phone into liquid,
yeah.
The best way to dry it out is to put it in a container full of uncooked rice. And the rice works as a desiccant, and it draws all the moisture out of your phone.
That is the second best way to do it. The best way to do it is to dunk your phone in denatured alcohol, which immediately removes all water.
Oh.
And does not and will damage the phone only to the extent that it stickers or adhesives. It'll sometimes do it'll sometimes discolor your phone. But if your whole thing is just to get the water out and make the phone work. If you have denatured alcohol and you submerge your phone in denatured alcohol,
although most people may not have denatured alcohol lying around, but a great many people do have bags of rice.
So am I supposed to just like put it in the rice and just leave it there?
Yeah, you'll leave it there for
how long?
a number of hours the rest of the day, something like that. Eventually, it just draws all of the
How would somebody have figured that out?
I have no idea.
That's one of those things that's like one of those things about like discovering, I don't know, like a God mode in Quake or something, or like a secret power up, or you know, like the Konami code. Like how is it that would even be discovered by somebody?
I have no idea.
Somebody's saying salt can also be used to remove large amounts of blood from carpeting.
Oh.
How did you know?
That's handy.
And just as I type, don't ask how I know. All caps. All right.
Fantastic. Oh.
Awesome. Can you use vodka? I don't know, but speaking of vodka, I should say this. We want to thank Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler, who were our guests on for taping of Outlook Portland this morning. That'll air this coming Sunday. They're going to talk about Sportlandia, which is their program that airs at sportlandiatv.com, part of the National Basketball Association's network of programs. So that is sportlandiatv.com this coming Sunday, 6:30 on Outlook Portland. Sarah X. Dillon and Greg Nibbler from funemploymentradio.com are going to be talking about that. It is Monday. It's 503-505-6964 of you. Like to join us, and don't be scared. We're not going to really any mockery will come from Dawn's side of the table. I, Rick Emerson, and I'm in a magnanimous and giving mood today. So feel free to call, or you know, not. It's 503-505-6964 if you want to do that. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com or Don, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. Don can also be reached at showpony. That is all one word, by the way. No underscore, no dot, not two different words. It is showpony @rickemerson.com. Also, as of today, never mind, doesn't really matter. Let's see. So we got that. Text box open to the website. Also, Skype is available if you'd like to do that. It's Rick Emerson Show via Skype. That is all one word. Rick Emerson Show via Skype. Today we're going to do we have to remember to do it because we always tease it and then we don't get it done and then it's like I just feel like an ass later on. So today we got to talk about last night's episode of The Killing, which you watched.
I did.
Okay. So we'll talk about last night's episode of The Killing, which was season 1, episode 9, which aired last night. We got a snuff watch coming up, Obama watch coming up, Democracy in the March. Mr. Ryan White will be here from the Oregonian. Let's see. And Don Taylor's tracking the following headlines for you on this Monday.
Former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty has officially thrown his hat into the ring for the presidential nomination.
He'll need plenty of money to run for office, Don.
A woman hides a container of marijuana exactly where you think she might. And
is it in her pooper?
No, it's in the other place that she could hide something.
Oh, okay.
An Illinois interstate is closed when a semi-truck dumps cows off an overpass.
Awesome. I mean, except for them. So that is all
cows
coming up today. We'll have a killing recap, all those headlines, Snuff Watch, Obama Watch, Democracy in the March, Ryan White, and more. So that is all on the way. Today we're going to welcome brand new listeners and subscribers, Lisa, Mina, and Tyler. That's Lisa, Mina, and Tyler. And by the way, Tyler says, if you were curious or anything, Mina, I'm sorry, it's Mena, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
How would you pronounce this? M-E-N-A.
Mina.
Yeah, because there's only one. Well, whatever. It's probably a hippie. So, Mena, he says. Mena. Well, doesn't it sound like kind of like a hippie name? Sort of?
I guess, maybe.
Or like, I don't know, like if your mom was just, I don't know, if your mom was like sitting around reading one of those like Reader's Digest hardcovers about Tutankhamun. He says, Mena and I are indeed a couple. I introduced her to Oregon Radio via Court and Fatboy a month into the relationship, and we've been listening to them ever since. That's Court and Fatboy, then Legion of News, and now this.
And now this.
Sort of like you're trending downward in your listening choices, sir.
No, he's building up. Uh-huh. He's moving his way up the ladder.
You were really like the last. This is sort of like an abandon all hope, ye who enter here.
This
sort
is the
of
peak. This is the pinnacle. This is the top of the pyramid.
Sure it is. This is like the seventh seal of online broadcasting, sir. So welcome. He says, and now this. She initially gave me a subscription for my birthday, then decided to get herself one because why not? See, this is what I'm talking about. So this is a perfect example of the wonderful kind of listener, which is the hallmark of the Rick Emerson Radio program. You know, Mena could have. Good God, are you scratching your foot again over there?
Ignore my feet. Ignore me with my foot. My feet are itchy.
Well, I could ignore your feet if you could ignore your feet, but you're just over there like a pig backing up against a plywood fence.
Oh, that's so unpleasant.
But do you need like a cheese grater or something?
No.
I don't even want to think about you cheese grating your feet, quite frankly.
No.
But I mean, the alternative is to sit. Because here's the thing. It looks like. It looks like you are either long overdue for a bathroom trip or you've got some sort of like inter-pant itch going on.
Normally my feet are fine because I have socks and shoes on like all day. But then I had to take my socks off and because I was at the guy getting the acupuncture and stuff this morning. He wanted to stick needles in my ankles, and I didn't put my socks back on.
Is the acupuncture causing your feet to itch?
No, the just, I don't.
Is it just being exposed to the air that causes your feet to itch?
Yes, because I think everything's, yes.
I thought it would be the opposite. I thought it would be if your feet got dank and musty.
I would think so, too. But, and yet, no, maybe they've just got, like moles, they have become used to being in a dark, moist environment. And now when they're actually in the air and the healthy oxygen, they go, no! I have no idea.
Sort of a podiatral albino alligator.
Yes.
Okay.
Precisely like that.
Is this
that.
Because of your whole, your scaliness and with the pee? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Mena and Tyler and Lisa.
Yes, it's because I have like psoriasis or eczema or something on my feet.
All right.
And it starts to go away and I'm like, hooray, I'm healed. And then it comes back because it just, it's like some kind of like horrible gypsy curse that just never leaves.
Sinner. Is this, and so this is a, and this is the thing that you were originally, I didn't want to say curing, you were treating through the cunning use of urine.
And I still do occasionally. It works brilliantly. I'm not going to like go pee on my feet right now though, because then I'd be sitting around here with pee feet. No,
well, that's
no one wants that.
Well, and also, I mean, also, if you were to do that, it would imply, not that I wouldn't be impressed, it would be implied that you had aiming abilities that were really, I think,
I don't
far and above those of your average mortal Earth woman.
Yes.
All right.
So I really was hoping to, at some point today, I want to urge people to, like, you know, patronize my chocolate business.
Yeah.
So it's probably best if I don't talk about my disgusting, itchy feet.
No, let's spend more time talking about bodily waste.
Let's talk about how, like, parts of my body are just flaking and itching and oozing. Yeah, that's an excellent idea.
It's like your feet themselves have a soft, creamy center, Don. Okay. Well, that's awesome. Anywho, so again, welcome to new listeners, Lisa, Mena, and Tyler. Anyway, Tyler says, and it's never been more apt, he says, then Legion of News, and now this. She initially gave me a subscription for my birthday and then decided to get herself one because why not? See, that's what I'm saying. So she's not sponging. She's not leeching.
Yeah.
You know, she's not just there just sort of drawing off of him like some sort of internet radio succubus.
She's an independent woman. She can make her own way in the world.
Some sort of online broadcast vampirism.
Right.
He says, I guess I'm still a plus one and a happy one at that. Best show ever. Then he adds parenthetically, tied with Cord and Fatboy. All right. Yeah, but I mean, really, they're not giving you foot talk like we give you foot talk.
No.
I mean, really. And here's the thing. The guys who are foot fetishists, they don't seem to like the clean feet. They like feet
really?
That have got... No, in my experience, and I'm not a foot fetishist, it was... Sarah, for many years, believed that I was, by the way. There was... And I would admit it if it were true. Sarah, for a long time, thought that I was a foot fetishist or that I was just either... That I was not out about it or that I was not out to my... That I lived in denial. And it was because I talked about foot fetishism all the time.
You were freaked out like last summer when I was walking around here in the studio barefoot.
No, I don't.
So no, you were definitely not
no.
a foot fetish.
It's just that I find the foot fetish fascinating. I find it really, really interesting because it's for a lot of reasons. Because it's not like I can get it's like guys who have they get like a real thing for like legs or like you know it's like whether you were you know like a boob guy or whatever. Like those are sort of. I mean, I don't really get the thing with legs either, I guess. But, I mean, like, some of those parts of the body are more overtly sexual, so I understand the attraction. The foot fetish thing, like, feet are just sort of there. They're just a utilitarian. I mean, they're just a... They're a part of my body that I access remotely just because I need to get from here to there.
Are there, like, elbow fetishes?
Well, there's an everything fetish. But it's, like, foot fetish. But of the... In my opinion, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but of the odd fetishes... By which I mean it is a part of the body that is not overtly sexual, yet has become sexualized. That is the most common... It's the biggest niche fetish. And so I'm really fascinated by it. And plus the idea that if you have a foot fetish... I mean, the joke I used to say was that if you're a foot fetish, like every beach is a nude beach. It must just be a fascinating yet hellish existence that everywhere you go there's feet. So she, for a long time, Sarah harbored this belief that I was a foot fetishist. What was my point? Oh, but so the guys who are really into that, they don't seem to like feet that are freshly scrubbed and clean. You'll see like a lot of classified ads. Like sometimes, like on the Intertron, you'll see these guys and they're average. It's like they want you to like, and they're offering to pay you more. Like if you'll just like wear the same socks for like a month. And then, like, you know, they'll pay you for the socks, too, if you just, like, leave those behind after you walk on them or whatever.
This, like, the used underpants guys?
Well, I guess. I don't really play on that side of the street either, so I don't know. But, I believe so, because it's like, what's the point of the underwear if you've just taken them out of the package and handed them to the guy?
Yeah.
I can imagine mm-hmm. there'd be no point to that at all. Anyway, I'm going to say Court and Fatboy doesn't give them this, but really, I mean, I don't know what day Byron is on, but whatever that day is, you probably do get this and more. I mean, let's just be honest. Byron is just sort of like a Whitman sampler of awful. which I mean in a good way. We love Byron, but I mean, it's, you know, Byron is like one of those novelty cans full of snakes, except he's just full of, except what he's full of just varies from day to day. It usually has to do with my buttocks being groped.
Yeah, Andrew, my acupuncturist massage guy, he and Byron have become good friends. And he assures me that Byron really is not as penis talky and outlandish and trying so hard to be shocking when he's not on the air. And then he says, but if you are a woman, he will still grab your boobs.
Yeah, no, and by the way, so maybe it's just, look, maybe I should be flattered, maybe it's just a compliment. Because it doesn't really seem to matter what sphere of existence I'm in when I meet by where I am, what we're doing, what the occasion is. It's like it's right for the... First of all, he just goes right for the... You know, just, and it's not like I have a... You know, whatever. I'm just not... As you know, I am not a very touchy person in general.
Yeah.
And so Byron just says... And again, I say this, you know, Byron's a longtime friend of the show. We should have him on one of these days.
Yes.
But it's, I just am not a close talker, close toucher, grabber, anything. And Byron immediately just, he has no sense of personal space. He's very British in that way, or like Portuguese, where he comes in and just sort of, and he just affixes himself to me like some sort of celebrity spotting barnacle. And it's just, you know, and which is sort of, you know. Which is sort of charming, I suppose. And again, you know, like I'll take a compliment wherever I can get it. It's just, you know, very odd. Do you think that Byron looks like Ernest Hemingway?
That had never occurred to me.
I do.
I guess I could see that.
Yeah. Like sort of a younger Ernest Hemingway, especially when he's got the beard.
When he's got the beard and the facial hair, yeah.
Looks very, very Hemingway-esque to me. Anyway, there you go. It's Monday. It's 503-505-6964. So all those headlines, Ryan White, Democracy in the March, Obama Watch, Snuff Watch, recap of last night's episode of The Killing. Let's see what else. A couple other things to get to here.
I have an unfortunate husband and dog story at some point if you want to hear it.
Oh, and you just deleted everything off your iPhone by mistake as well. Well done. Did you press a button that said, please delete everything?
I did.
Was there a remove all switch?
I don't know what happened. Okay. I was doing iTunes is so frustrating and annoying, and I have the new laptop and I plugged it into the iPhone, and I wanted to add some of the music that I had on the computer to the iPhone, and so it was like doing the sync thing, and it gave me the whole poorly worded thing about, this phone is associated with a different iTunes on a different computer.
Right.
Do you want to? Something that barely makes any sense, yes or no? And I was like, well, sure, I'd like it associated with this version of iTunes. So I clicked it. And then I'm like trying to drag the music over into the phone and it won't go. And I don't know what's going on. It's like, crap, I've got other stuff to do. So I do my other things while the phone is syncing. Then I come back later and I look on it to see if it had worked. And not only did it not do what I wanted it to do, it basically erased everything on my phone except for the three things that I wanted to put on there. So I now have, like, basically the entire cast album from the Book of Mormon and Nino Rota's theme from Fellini's 8 and a Half. That's the only music on my iPod now.
That's not really road-tripping material right there either, so.
Yeah.
All right. It was just nothing but asparagus and cuttlefish coming your way. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, that's that is the thing that happens occasionally with... I read everything that iTunes tries to do like 3 or 4 times before I press yes, because iTunes is really the weak link in the Apple computing chain. As much as I love Apple, that's a thing where it's like iTunes seems deliberately... It is because it's the most Microsoft-like of all their products. And so if you don't choose exactly correctly, it will say... Thank you for pressing yes. Now deleting all of your precious, irreplaceable music. Wonderful. And you're like, no! And that's a thing where... Here's the thing about computing, too. Because we live now in a world of miniaturization and acceleration in terms of your computing processes, it's not like it's a gas leak where you can interrupt by like going over and like kicking out the hose at the last moment. It doesn't matter if you unplug it or not. You are done. You're toast. All your stuff is gone. In fact, just this over the last week or so, I've become increasingly more paranoid about all of my data. And it didn't help matters when, like, Ryan White's house got burgled and they just, like, said, oh, thanks for putting everything in a hard drive. All your stuff is a handle. Yoink. And they just grabbed all of his stuff and left. So now not only do I have my hard drive, not only do I have it backed up on a separate, like an external drive, now I have everything backed up on like a server in Des Moines. Literally, it's like in the side of a mountain. So because I live in fear of like that exact thing happening. So
well, I was very happy, by the way, with the other computer dying, that I had backed up a lot of stuff because, as I mentioned, I rebooted the chocolate site at PolidoriChocolates.com. But I had to, there was a whole thing that went on with my server, my hosting company was sold in the meantime since I last did anything to my site. And everything was migrated to this other new owner. And somewhere along the line, I don't know why, but a lot of the photos and stuff that I had on the site just sort of the links vanished, the stuff disappeared. Not all of it, just some of it. So I had to sit there this weekend and go through and just basically do maintenance on the entire site in WordPress, putting photos back in and rebuilding things. And fortunately, like a few months ago, I had the foresight to just basically burn all of the graphics, all the photos, everything I had on my old laptop onto a DVD and put it aside so that I knew I had a disk that had like all of the graphics for my website and all of that stuff just burned to a disk. And so I was able to just like pop that in and use it, because that would have just been tragic if I didn't have that stuff, because I would have had to, I don't know,
kill yourself.
Myself, basically, yeah.
Yeah. By the way, we're going to talk to Mr. Aaron Duran with The Weekend Geek here. He'll be joining us in just a skosh, so we'll get to him in just a moment. I do want to say hello and howdy to, let's see. So I was at so Roger Klein was Friday at Dante's, and so I want to thank everybody who came out to see the Roger Klein show, and everybody who sort of it is always one of those things where it's like when you recommend, we try to get somebody to listen to music, or you recommend that somebody, especially if it's something they haven't seen before or a band they're not familiar with, and you're asking, you know, you're trying to convince them like it's worth your you know, your $15, your $20, your $25 to get a ticket. I mean, you know, that's $25 is never incidental, but especially, you know, what with the trying economic times and all. And it's like, you know, you're telling a guy to, you know, to lay down a quarter of $100 plus service charge plus whatever to go see it. So I always take it as a great compliment when people sort of trust our music judgment enough to go check out something that we have recommended. So at the Roger Klein Show, Dante's on Friday, which was awesome, by the way, so we ran into several listeners there. Listener Larry. And by the way, it was Larry's first show, and he had the most glorious series of tweets on Friday night. It was a whole lot of like, at Roger Klein Show, at Roger Klein Show, you know, just said howdy to Rick Emerson because I passed him on the way to something or other, and he was like, hey, best show ever, and I'm here because I heard you talking about it. And then he, and then later on he's like, you know, at Roger Klein Show, three songs in, is best live show I have seen in months, you know, and then later, like, you know, midnight, like, at Roger Klein Show, am unbelievably drunk, this is best night of my life. So it was just my phone would vibrate and I would look down and he would have posted something and then I would look over and I would just see him with the most beatific look of happiness on his face. So listener Larry, listener Paul, and then a guy who said, you can just call me Wookie. So, and so I shall, sir. So listener Wookie. And then, by the way, here's a thing that you don't see all that often. Let me just, this just gives you, and as I sometimes say, I am under no illusions that I'm like, you know, any kind of like actual celebrity or that I'm actually important like in any real way. But you do get every now and again just the tiniest little glimpse into what it must be like to be an actual celebrity. So it's like here I am at, so this is Friday night at Roger Klein. So at one point, I get up during the show and I go over to get some water, use the restroom, and then go back to enjoy, you know, to enjoy the rest of the show. And by the way, so here's like Larry. He's, you were right, at Rick Emerson, three songs in. This is a great show. 15 exclamation marks. later on, person next to me just told me this is their 16th Roger Klein show. She said, quote, welcome, brother. This feels like family, at Rick Emerson. I love you. Many, many, many exclamation marks. But then I get up at one point to get some water and use the restroom. And my phone vibrates again, and I check this, and there's a listener who I will not identify, but she puts on Twitter, and I imagine that this is whispered, just saw my imaginary boyfriend at Rick Emerson. Which is, oh, I'm sorry, it's not boyfriend. What is boyfriend? BF?
Yeah.
What is BFF?
Best friend forever.
Oh, I see. So there you go. So it's a platonic sort of love. Yes. Just saw my imaginary BFF at Rick Emerson. And I meant to do this and then I got distracted. I wanted to tweet back at her later on, like, I'm outside your house. You know, or just, your hair smells like daisies or something. I couldn't think of anything appropriately creepy, though. So I'm looking at you right now. Maybe I should do that tonight at like 3 a.m.
Yeah, I sent somebody, my friend Bobby, I sent him an email the other day where he said something about me being stocky and shouty or something, and I wrote back in all caps, "I'm saving all of your hair in a bucket."
I'm totally going to message her back tonight. I'm watching you sleep. Anyway, so thanks to everybody who came out and who sort of took a leap of faith and bought a ticket to the Roger Klein Show on Friday, which was excellent. And I've seen him probably 10 or 12 times now. And it was really, really, really just a wonderful show. By the way, here's, and then we really will get to Aaron Duran right after this. But I can say, you know, it was so wonderful that even, and you've seen Bigger Than Jesus, there's that part at the end where I talk about the seven kinds of people you always see at a concert. Mm-hmm. And one of them is the air guitaring sweat sprayer. And it's the guy who's so into the show that he's just like showering you with his essence as he sort of like tries to recreate like some Eddie Van Halen. This guy wasn't, it wasn't like he was air guitaring. First of all, he was huge. He was like, I would imagine 6'7", 6'8". I mean, he was tall, but and then also gigantic. I mean, he looked like a linebacker. He was one of those guys that like, if you found out he played like center for the Dallas Cowboys, like you would not be surprised. He was a huge, huge guy. And like all of those guys, he was just wearing like one of those tank tops. It was like real roomy on the sides, and then a cowboy hat. And as Lara noted at one point, she said, guys with cowboy hats like to gesture a lot using the hat, and guys with hats have a lot to say to each other. And so he would constantly be leaning over during the show to talk to this other behatted fellow. And because he was wearing like this shirt that exposed as much of his surface area as possible, and again, he's a huge guy, and we're at Dante's. It's sold out. It's a warm night in May. Also, it's like a rock show that's been going for like 2.5 hours. And plus, he's been gyrating and drinking. And he's, again, a large man. And it was like every time he would lean over, it was like he's so large that it's like a bunch of his surface area would like strafe us. And we would just sort of be like, you know, and there was nowhere to move.
Oh,
because
gosh.
It's like it's packed. I mean, the place was like, I mean, it was like you couldn't have gotten another person there with a shoehorn. And we're there with Jenny, a listener, Jenny, and her husband, Adam. And he's up against a post, and there's nowhere we can go. We're fenced in. And so the guy would, like, lean over to talk to some other hat wearer, presumably about how great the show was and how awesome it was to be enjoying it. And he would say, but he would lean over, and it's like his flab would go like,
oh, God.
And it would just, and it would scrape by us. Like two marlin passing each other in a briny sea.
Oh, God, I remember that.
And then I would just kind of go, And it would just, and I would look down and just, it was like acid on the deck of the Nostromo. I was just trying to get off me as fast as I possibly could. And the thing is, it was hard to be angry at the guy because he was having such a good time. It was like the best night of his life. And I would rather have that guy than a guy who's looking for a fight.
Yeah, back in my punk rock days, that guy would have been wearing a tank top and a kilt.
Ugh.
And then have a hairy back.
Yeah.
And then just have to keep like squeezing by you or accidentally bump into you when one of his buddies bashes into him in the mosh pit and sends him flying into you. And then you just get like a sweaty guy stain all over the front of your shirt.
It was like some sort of a grease covered hot air balloon sort of folding itself over us over and over again throughout the night. And again, he wasn't causing any ruckus. He was having a great time.
Yeah.
He was happy to be there, but goddamn. It was like by the end of the night, and it's like literally at one point he leaned over to like, you know, high five somebody about, this is awesome, and high five. And that's not, you know, he's sort of the exception of that. You don't typically get a lot of guys like that. But he leaned over, and it's like when he pulled back, literally it's like in just a half a second that he touched me, it's like it had soaked through my shirt against into my body. It's just so awful.
Oh, God.
It was awful on every level. Anyway, all right. Well, we got more to talk about. Let's do this. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program from geekinthecity.com with the Week in Geek, our good friend, Mr. Aaron Duran. Hello, fine, sir. How are you on this Monday?
Well, hello. I'm so glad the last few weeks my introduction has always been preceded by sweat and hair. It's fantastic.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, it was a great show, and the guy was just having a good time, not harming anyone, but it was just, and again, I would rather have that guy than somebody who's just there pounding long necks all night and then looking to, like, you know, go knuckle dusting with somebody else. But it's like, but it's like you're just, you know, and occasionally, like, then here's the worst part, you know, because I love Dante's, you know, it really is a nice place, but it's a cozy venue, and we were over to, like, if you're facing the stage, we were off to the left, and the bass player, and the thing about Roger Klein is, you know, they're very, very, like, of the people, and so they really, like, interact with the crowd a lot, and the bass player was doing that thing of, like, walking out to the edge of the stage, and, like, you know, and kind of like making a lot of eye contact and like doing the high five and like, you know, shaking people's hands, and people would be passing up drinks or whatever, which is all great, except that it's like just further inducement for this guy. Every time the bass player, you know what it's like, it's like we were all moths, and occasionally the flame or the lamp would just sort of wave itself out over the crowd, and everything would just surge toward the stage. And so like as the bass player would sort of come over and like, you know, interact with us, the guy would just immediately just start, like, you know, like leaning forward and like doing a lot of like throwing the devil horns back and forth and back and forth. And it's like every time he does it, it's like he's the Pope with that water spraying handle thing that he carries around, you know, and just sort of going like, whoa. It's like when you get out of the it's like when you leave the bathroom and you don't have time to wait for the paper towel and you just shake your hands off. It's like he's just doing that as he's trying to get the bass player's attention, and it's just like drenching all of us like he's just some sort of horrible pink rainbird. It's just awful. I mean, it was just, you know, the best thing. It was the worst thing about a great night. I'll put it that way. So in any event. Let's see. Where are my spectacles and my telephone? So the
bring up the infos there.
Yeah, you sent me a thing this morning. I think I inadvertently deleted it. So Dark Knight Rises. So first of all, when does that come out? Do we know?
Doesn't come out until like June of next year.
And they're already starting like the online like viral crap for it, right?
Yeah, they're already starting to ramp some stuff up. There were some hints that things were going to start going down last week. And then people that were poking around the Warner Brothers site a few days ago realized that Warner Brothers had hidden a URL simply called The Dark Knight Rises. And if you went to thedarkknightrises.com, you get this almost tribal chanting that I believe is in Spanish, but it's this tribal sounding chanting, repeating some phrases over and over and over again. But once it finishes, you got a pixelated image on the screen that eventually cleaned up and showed you the first image of Thomas Harding as Bane.
So now tell me a little bit about, some comics knowledge, more than maybe the layman, but not like an expert. So what, tell me about Bane. Bane is the big bad for this film?
Well, I don't know if he's going to be the big bad in this film. Bane's an interesting character. He's also kind of a polarizing character for old school Batman fans. He was created in the early 90s, right after the whole death of Superman. Because a few months after that, Bane was the character that broke Batman's back.
Oh right, okay, I do remember that. That wasn't in Killing Joke, but that was in. Was that in a graphic novel of some kind?
Yeah, I mean he early. Well, what's kind of interesting is the character Bane was brought about after a miniseries in which Batman becomes addicted to a drug called Venom. It's basically steroids.
Okay,
and you know. Batman, you know, breaks, you know, he breaks from the clutches of Venom because he's not a drug addict. He's Batman. And then years later, the guy who wrote that story, Danny O'Neill, created this character called Bane that was born in a South American prison with the whole kind of belief that, you know, if you come from bad parents, you're going to be a bad person. So just stay in prison. And he's, experimented on since he's a little kid. But he's also incredibly intelligent because he had nothing else to do but be experimented on and then read books for his entire life, and then decides that he was denied a birthright and, I don't know, targets Bruce Wayne for it. It's comic book logic, but...
This was Nightfall, by the way. That was apparently
where the series was called Nightfall, and it was actually a pretty decent story. It was just a lot of fans get annoyed when they introduce a brand new character to do, you know, earth-shattering events within a comic book that's been around for 60 years.
Right.
So that's just one of those. Same with in Superman, that it was Doomsday that killed him. Like, who the hell was Doomsday?
Right, Doomsday was a thing the marketing department unearthed in the Arctic.
Pretty much, and the same could be said for Bane. But over time, Bane has evolved within the comics to actually be a pretty interesting character. He's far more three dimensional than when he was just brought in as this very intelligent brute.
Well, they've got, they really have their work cut out for them if they're going to try to out-viral all the stuff they did for Dark Knight, because, I mean, that was really, I mean, you know, with the exception of some of the stuff that J.J. Abrams has done, I mean, it really is, like, off the charts. I mean, I think probably the best viral marketing that I have ever seen for a widely consumed pop culture product.
Yeah, exactly. I'm curious, I've kind of got my suspicions about how this is going to go. I think we're going to start seeing, because you know how they did like the Gotham News.
Right.
And, you know, gang violence in Gotham and elect Harvey Dent. I think we're going to see them using a lot of, quote, fake headlines about various revolutions in South America and politically influencing the United States. Because that's kind of Bane's whole background.
And so this is, and so this all started. Today's show is sort of like trickling out there onto the net, and then the movie doesn't come out until like next June, right?
Yeah, I mean, we got a long ways to go, but you know what? I know it's all advertising, and I'm not an idiot, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't have a blast during the Dark Knight viral marketing.
No, the Dark Knight stuff was awesome.
Yeah, if this is the same marketing team and advertising team that did the Dark Knight, then you know what? Screw it. I'm on board because, yeah, I was being marketed to, but I had a blast doing it.
Well, so. I don't think, like a lot of people, I don't have a problem with advertising as long as I'm getting a little something in exchange for, you know. In other words, I am willing to hear the pitch as long as in exchange for that I'm being given, you know, either information or actual, like, you know, something valuable, you know, actual valuable advice or direction about purchasing something that I might actually need, or entertainment. And, you know, the Dark Knight viral campaign, which was, you know, which really was exceptional. You know, and of course, that's how we ended up, you know, meeting Dan Clark, Pirate Dan, because he was the guy who actually found the Joker phone and the cake, and there was a whole thing. So, I mean, if it's half as good as it was last time, I'm looking forward to it. Let's see what else. And so this last week, and then Hobo with a Shotgun opened, which I did not see. Just I got like nothing done. Here's what I got watched this weekend. I got almost all of Twilight Eclipse watched. That was about it. Not even finished that.
How good for you? What a good weekend you
had. Yeah, I mean, it was. I really felt like I made the most of my time on planet Earth over the Saturday and Sunday. But so Hobo with a Shotgun opened in Portland. Did it open nationwide? Are they sort of like, do you know if they're rolling that out, sort of platforming it, or?
It technically opened almost a month ago on pay-per-view, on kind of like the direct access channels, which is what a lot of low-budget movies are doing now. They're opening, you know, they're debuting as a pay-per-view download first, and then getting a limited theatrical release. So Hobo with a Shotgun opened limited last Friday, and the Hollywood Theater in Northeast Portland is the only theater in town that is showing Hobo with a Shotgun right now.
And so that is the Hollywood Theater right now, and it's Rutger Hauer, and then we had a discussion with Aaron Mesh about it about last week. And I have heard sort of mixed reviews from people I know that have seen it, that have said that, you know, that it has not been universal acclaim, but the one thing that everybody has latched onto is apparently that Hauer is really, really good.
Everything I've heard is that it kind of reminds you of old school violent John Carpenter movies.
Yeah, which is, you know, and, you know, I appreciate that sort of thing if it's done correctly.
Yeah. The other really cool thing is I think, and only the Hollywood is doing this, because Dan Halstead built a special Rutger Hauer-centric trailer reel before Hobo with a Shotgun, so go for that alone at least.
Excellent. And then speaking of violence, so I'm just going to read this the way you texted it to me. You just said, my halfling storm sorcerer is going to kick ass at May of the Dead this Saturday. So
that's right.
So May of the Dead has been going all month, and then it's going to climax this Saturday at Guardian Games. Here to tell us more about that, Aaron Duran.
So yeah, all day Saturday, May 28th, from the time they open, which is right around noon, until, you know, the police kick us all out for noise ordinance violations, Guardian Games is going to wrap up the month of May of the Dead. It's all day zombie gaming at Guardian Games, and I'm also shockingly I'm in the middle of an undead themed D&D campaign where I play a halfling storm sorcerer that explodes the undead with lightning. Okay. And he's awesome.
Of course. And for people who maybe have not gone to this before, it's not just role-playing games. I mean, it's kind of like every kind of game.
Yeah, no, if tossing funky shaped dice is not your thing, I mean, they're going to have all kinds of games there. They're going to have zombie-themed board games, card games. I think they're going to have Left 4 Dead up and running on various systems. Generally, they play zombie movies all day long. There's going to be makeup artists there where you can get made up. There's going to be members of the Zombie Defense Force teaching you how to prepare your home, you know, for the inevitable zombie apocalypse. I think a new group just signed up where they will basically turn you into a zombie and make it into like a shooting range target paper.
Fantastic.
So, it's getting big. This is the third year we've done it, and it's getting bigger and bigger every year. I think next year it's going to end up being an entire weekend because one day just can't contain the carnage. And I think are you going to be there?
I will be there as well. In fact, Guardian Games, they just expanded because Angel and Michelle had opened. They have that whole section in the back now where it's like the 21 and over. They have like the liquor license.
Yeah. And so it's the the tapped out bar.
Yeah.
So the places, I mean, it's, yeah, they basically doubled it in size. They've made a real, you know, a really huge effort to expand that place and accommodate
everyone. Yeah, I was
everyone.
There last year, and it was hugely fun, and I got zombified, and I still have the pictures of myself with the zombie makeup and played zombie games. And I think Aaron and I were both part of the same, or maybe it was Jen, playing the same game of zombies for a while.
I think we played some zombies. Oh, I think we played some zombie flux. Oh, and the zombie dice game. Look, it's nerdy and great, and it has the undead, and it's really one of the best days you'll have sitting, you know, in a game store all day long. It's pretty fantastic.
And we should say that actually that is back to back with something else. We've got so as we sort of wrap up May of the Dead, so that is going to be on Saturday the 28th, the night before, which is Friday the 27th at the Hollywood Theater. We were just talking about Dan Halstead and our good friend Siegfried. So Friday, May 27th, the Hollywood Theater, the Zombie Film Festival is actually happening. It's just it is one night only, and it's going to be a double feature of Demons and Night of the Comet. Demons and Night of the Comet happening Friday, May 27th at the Hollywood Theater, the Zombie Film Festival. That is a Friday, May 27th, the Hollywood Theater, Demons and Night of the Comet. And then following that will be the next day of May of the Dead, the gaming all day at Guardian Games, which is at 303 Southeast 3rd.
Yes, 303 Southeast 3rd Avenue.
Excellent. Awesome. You can find out more about that by going to, I believe it is just guardiangames.com. Is the website for that.
Actually, it's you can go to Guardian Games Portland or ggportland.com.
All right, Guardian Games Portland or ggportland.com. Awesome. Anything else of note happening at Geek in the City, my friend?
Right now, just the new episode is up, Geek in the City Radio, episode 111, where my sister comes on and proceeds to embarrass the ever-living hell out of me.
Excellent. Wonderful.
And you can also now weekly read my reviews over – my comic book reviews over at newsarama.com as well. So.
All right. It is geekinthecity.com. That is geekinthecity.com, Mr. Aaron Duran. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
All right. There you go. That is Aaron Duran with the Week in Geek. Awesome. All right. Let's see. Do I have anything else that we absolutely need to talk about here before we take a break and come back with Mr. Ryan White? Oh, I was going to issue a challenge to you.
Okay.
Sort of a Song Fu kind of a challenge.
Oh, all right.
Well, because the Snuffbotch is who I think it is, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it's the he's the guy that did the thing.
Yeah.
All right. So I was going to actually originally for the top five today, so we were going to have Ryan White put together the top five of songs that he was subjected to because of his parents,
mm-hmm.
and then he ended up getting behind with some you know newspapering things. So he's going to be here, but he doesn't have the top five with him. So I was actually going to issue you a challenge that twixt now and like three. For you to put together the top five other songs that fall into the same genre of that song. And you know the song that I'm referring to.
Wow. Okay. I'll see what I can do.
All right. So, and then, so that you'd have like what? You'd have like 47 minutes to put that together.
Okay.
So, it'll all make sense when we come back. We'll come back. We'll talk to Ryan White. We'll do the Snuff Watch later on. We will have that top five. We'll do a recap of last night's episode of The Killing and more. Stay there. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Go nowhere. We're back after this.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
You're underselling yourself, Don. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. In mere moments, we'll be joined by Mr. Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian. Later on, we get your snuff watch, Obama watch, Democracy on the March. Let's see, a recap of last night's episode of The Killing and so forth. I'm just going to read this apropos of nothing. It's just it's sort of the non sequitur observation that I like. Trevor says, "The world is awash with death, yet Harry Morgan continues to exist. He should be numbered among the immortals."
Good for him. Can I tell you my dog story real quick?
Sure.
I'll throw you off. Because it's a real quick story. It's just that you have a dog, so I thought you would appreciate this. My husband came home last night. Actually, I saw the dog, like, licking at something in this sort of sneaky sort of manner, like she was eating something she shouldn't eat and looking at me and then eating something and looking at me. And I realized she was eating something out of a plastic Fred Meyer bag that should not have been on the floor. So I said, well, no, it's not gross. It's just unfortunate. My husband had gone to the grocery store last night and brought stuff home and put it on the floor and never picked it up and took it into the kitchen and put it away.
Yeah.
And my dog ate a half a pound of butter.
Oh, wow. When did that happen?
I first noticed it this morning. She was looking at it this morning, and I made her go to bed, and I picked everything up. So I fully expect to go home this afternoon, and it's just going to be unfortunate.
I can't even imagine.
In my living room.
I mean, I can't even really. I
told Patrick he had to stop by on his way back to work after running all of his route, because he's cleaning it up.
I mean, and that's the thing where it's like you can't. And there's really nothing you can do proactively. I mean, it's like, you know, it would be, I mean, you don't want to be like sticking the dog in a crate or something, because then that's going to be, you know, because really.
Yeah. And it could have been worse if I hadn't noticed it and had left it there all day, the dog being a dog and being bored. There was also like two bags of chocolate chips in there.
Yeah.
And chocolate can actually kill dogs, but at the very least, it gives them even worse horrific diarrhea. So, yeah, my dog now has like a half a pound of butter in her gut.
Wash this down with some castor oil.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Have fun with that.
So I called Patrick on the phone. He's like, oh, and I'm like, Yeah, no, you are stopping by the house before I get home, and you are cleaning this up.
Yeah, be sure to tweet relentlessly about that today, just to help put my own troubles into some sort of perspective.
Yeah,
you're listening to the Rick Emerson. Blah.
Rick Emerick.
I went to say that while reading something on the screen. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you. It's 503-505-6964 and so forth. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program, Mr. Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian. Hello, sir.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm good.
What were we just talking about moments ago that I found interesting? Now it's gone. I don't know what's wrong with my brain today.
I wasn't paying attention because, you know.
Whole head full of Swiss cheese over here. Oh, so as I was saying during the break, though. So, yeah, so I started to watch Twilight Eclipse this weekend, which, by the way, I blame on my wife and Cheryl because it's like they got me started watching it. And so now because of my completist tendencies, yeah. It's like I feel like I have to watch the entire series.
I didn't think it was as bad as, say, the first one, but it's still Twilight.
No, it's
so
terrible.
You feel the need to even watch bad things?
Well,
through?
Once I've begun. I mean, that's the thing. It's like I just, even though after tonight, because tonight is the season finale of House for season 7, after which, and I can't speak for Dom, but after this, I am done. I am pulling the ripcord after tonight. The show has gotten, it has trended so far down and been so bad for so long that it is no longer worth the investment of my time.
They would have to do something like cast Eddie Izzard as like a regular to get me to come back ever again.
They would have to take extraordinary measures to get me to watch the program again. Because the thing is, that's like an ongoing investment. That's the difference between that and like finishing out a bad film series. Bad film series is it's like 2 hours, which I mean, sure, you could say the 2 hours is like watching House for 2 weeks. But I mean, you know, but a television show, I mean, House is like this season anyway is 23 hours of programming. I mean, even without commercials, it's like 18 hours. So I mean, if you told me that if every Twilight installment was going to be 18 hours long, I might think twice of it. But I mean, you know, the investment of 2 hours just to sort of check it off. It's like with the goddamn Saw movies, which I had to watch all the way to the end too. Even though, I mean, once you pass the second one, it was just like this exercise and it wasn't even an exercise in disgust. It was just like this exercise in like grayscale tedium, you know, that just went on and on and on. But it's like I felt like I didn't have any choice. You know?
I saw Kung Fu Panda 2 this weekend, by the way.
Now, did you do that in your capacity as critic?
Yes, okay. I did. And so I really can't. I'm not supposed to
review
it.
Well, you're being paid for that, at least.
I'm not supposed to review it until Friday, but I will
embargoed.
Say this. I really liked the first one. And let me just put it that way. I really liked the first one. I didn't think I would. I thought, oh, Jack Black as a panda, Kung Fu. Oh, and it turned out the plot was actually structured like an honest-to-God classic Kung Fu movie. It was really well done, the first one. This one is kind of like, hey, we made a whole lot of money. We need to make another one, and it's going to be in 3D. So let's just make it really loud and frenetic and throw a lot of fight scenes in there and like have things flinging at the screen. And plot, who cares? Who cares about plot? Just make a lot of stuff happen.
I have an easier time believing Jack Black is a panda bear than Jack Black in a movie I like.
I mean, and Jack Black is one of those guys we've sort of talked about people that are overcome by their own, where they are eventually undone by their own charisma or their own. It's not even, I don't even know the persona is the right way to put it, because Jack Black is one of those guys, though, that you put him on the screen and a lot of people who are into him, they will instinctively sort of smile or laugh before he does anything, because it's that sort of like, I know what he's about to do because he's Jack Black. And it's, you know, but it's like you can only stir that drink for so long before it just curdles on you. And also
it's like about the fourth time in like 5 minutes, the beginning of this
film. Please tell me there's a Tone Loc song.
No, there's not. But it's
Young
like
MC.
It's like, boy, look. The first time we actually see the giant fat panda, the first time on screen, is like, look at him. He's stuffed like 60, you know, steamed buns in his mouth. And then it's like, he does something else. It's like, oh, I got to eat those noodles. And oh, there's food over there. And I leaned over to Eric Siner and I said, it's funny because he's fat and he likes to eat.
And plus, he's a Cartoon character, so you could make fun of him.
Yeah, and so that that's as far as like the character development is that we're going in this one. It's like he likes to eat.
The character development in Twilight basically seems to consist of that Taylor Lautner kid just taking off his shirt and leaning against things.
Yeah,
it's seriously, it's like the entire movie is just one. But here's the thing about it is, in that way, I think it is actually true to life, because if I were that guy. That's my entire day would be spent mapping out the town and finding places where I could go, Well, I guess I'll have reclined against this gazebo. And then just putting up my arms and just waiting for chicks to walk by and just, you know, and to bruise themselves on my midsection.
Now, is Eclipse or the one before it the one where Robert Pattinson goes to Rome?
That's the one before it. That's
New
Moon.
And then tries to kill himself by taking his shirt off in the town square. And you just look at him and go, oh, don't take your shirt off.
Yeah.
Because particularly after watching, like, tan and, like, overly buff and sort of insanely muscled Taylor Lautner, then seeing, like, scrawny, skinny, white, painfully, like, you know, undernourished Robert Pattinson take his shirt off. It's like, no, no, please put your shirt back on.
Yeah, the second one is the you're talking about the Valturi, Dawn, where they go to Rome, the Valturi, who are the, they're like the Jedi Council or whatever
and
of the vampire world.
And I gotta say, a movie about them would have been so much more interesting.
That was the best thing about that, and I can feel myself turning into a woman as I have this conversation, I know, but that was the best thing about the second film, was that whole weird, because it was like...
They were so much more interesting than Edward and Bella and Wolf Boy could ever hope to be.
Well, because, like, here's another person in the movie, in the Twilight films, who was actually kind of interesting to me, is her dad. Her dad, Charlie, who I find, I mean, I don't want to watch a movie about him, but he's sort of an interesting character, and I like that guy. He's sort of like your poor man's Michael Biehn, whoever that is.
Yeah, but, and also, why wouldn't a movie about him be more interesting? It's like, here's a guy, he, like, lives in a small town, he drives a truck, and his daughter comes to live with him after not living with him for years, and she decides, oh, she's going to run off and be in love with a vampire.
Well,
that's an interesting story. What's his deal?
See, this is the thing. So you should get on it. This could be like the Wicked thing where you're writing like Charlie's story.
Yeah, or like that Jane Eyre thing where I write about the story of the first wife who was locked up in the attic.
Or what was that book that was the Gone with the Wind thing?
Yeah,
where the woman wrote it and it was like from the point of view of like one of the servants or like one of the, you know, it was called The Wind.
Prissy or whatever it was. Yes.
Yeah, The Wind Gone or whatever.
The Wind is Gone now.
I believe it actually was called The Wind Done Gone was the name of that.
I don't know nothing about no wind.
Because there was this whole like court battle from Margaret Mitchell's estate where they didn't want anybody to be able to use the same characters. And then the woman had to argue that it was parody. And I think she lost, actually. I think that book actually got taken. I think it was literally burned. I think they actually pulled the book off the market and actually like destroyed it. The thing about the Twilight films is, one of the things about them is it's sort of the Lucas. It's the Lucas deal where even people who you know kind of can act, like Kristen Stewart, is not totally without acting ability. But then neither
is Robert Pattinson.
No, and you see them in a movie that where clearly they realize that, you know, character development and acting and being able to convey something about, you know, about the emotional conflict happening under the surface. That's all well and good if you can fit it in, but it's not all that crucial. It's like with Jack Black, you know, just, you know, at some point play Born to be Wild, and then he does a thing where he eats something and then he screams a lot, and then later they play Bad to the Bone, and then they play, they play I Got You, I Feel Good, and then he eats some more, and then you're done.
Then he realizes that he's been an ass and he's sincere and he's sorry and he gets a little teary-eyed and everyone feels bad for him.
And Twilight is that way too, except it's just a lot of Kristen Stewart just like staring out a window and going, you don't understand, and like biting her lower lip. And
playing with her hair.
Yeah, and then like Taylor Lautner just like bench pressing things in the prison yard. And then Robert Pattinson, who, here's the thing, and I don't know, maybe this is just me, or maybe they're doing something to him like in post-production. Have we introduced Ryan White? Hello, Ryan White.
Hello.
Have you seen any of the Twilight films?
God, no.
All right. Good for you. Try to stay pure. Don't let it taint you. It is too late for me, son, but you can save yourself. The thing about Robert Pattinson is, I mean, unless they are altering his appearance away, he's weird looking.
He is kind of weird looking.
But he's the presumably the hot guy, right? Like he is the supposed hunk.
They wanted somebody that looked kind of otherworldly and pasty and white and
mission accomplished. I mean, he does. Yeah. I mean, he's all pointy and he kind of looks like sort of like a real world sort of Beavis.
And then they do something in post to make his, because he's a sparkly vampire,
right?
So they do want to make him look. You know, paler and more like ethereal or something. Because they do that to all of them, like Peter Facinelli, who plays the dad.
Right.
You know, the dad vampire. He's not that alabaster-ish.
No,
you know?
we did the saddest phoner with him when we were at KUFO, where they had him at Janssen Beach. He was like is there like a Home Depot or something out there?
Yeah.
They had him doing like signings at like the Best Buy at Janssen Beach and just no one was there. And we were talking to him and said, So I imagine it's just pandemonium out there right now. And he just said, well, no, just kind of standing here. And they apparently had not told anybody or promoted it in advance. And so he was just like standing in front of the Best Buy at Janssen Beach, just looking at his watch, waiting to be able to leave. So, Yeah, so that's what I did this weekend. I sat around and I ate granola directly out of the box without the benefit of milk. And I watched like 90% of Twilight Eclipse because my wife was gone. And so that's the wild and crazy life that I lead when she's not there. And then I watched that Red Fang video like 6 more times. So, which, and you have not probably had a chance to watch that
yet. No, I did. I have watched it.
And how awesome is that?
It is awesome. It is. It's not only awesome, but it's also, it's that weird. I don't usually, again, growing up in Los Angeles, don't usually get that thing of like, hey, I know where that is, because come on, you know. But I was just like, hey, that's the convenience store up the street where I like always buy my stuff. That's like my Vizo store. I was very excited. 7 Days Market.
So if anybody has not had a chance to see the video for the new Red, and I forget what the name of the song actually is. It keeps escaping.
Wires.
It's awesome, and I don't want to give away the ending, but really, it's on my Facebook page right now, and you can probably find it at Oregonian Oregon.
It's on
Live.
Oregon Live. It's on it's all over the place. It's collecting hits at a pace probably on par with the prehistoric dog video that got them all their attention to begin with.
Well, I got to say that it's difficult for me to be impressed by a video at this point. I mean, it's like, you know, it's hard to see something that hasn't been done.
Well, I was saying in the office, I think I wrote this on Oregon Live. There's a lesson in that video, which is that you should give video money to the right bands.
Exactly.
I mean, I watched, I think last week too, they was the premiere of, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, the Lady Gaga video for Judas, which was just like there's like a Lady Gaga video generator now that you just plug in, okay, Judas, religious motif, and like every hack, you know, religious metaphor is used. You know, you got the biker wearing the crown of thorns and Lady Gaga in the Christ pose with splashing water, and it's just boring and stupid, and it probably cost 50 to 100 times more than the Red Fang video cost.
I had that thought when her latest single, that I guess the Judas, when it came out and I heard it, and it's
bad.
I mean, song. I have to admit that it did, you know, there were large sections of that opening that got stuck in my head for the better part of a day, but you're right, it does seem like it came from some sort of, like one of those Play-Doh extruding devices that just, you know, where you're like star, circle, square. And, you know, she just picked, and it was, you know, and this was her sort of.
Yeah. I haven't heard the whole record yet. I mean, the one song, Edge of Glory, which has Clarence Clemons on saxophone, which still is a hard.
Does that just hurt you when that happens?
It doesn't hurt me. It's just weird to say. And like apparently the two of them are going to be on the season finale of American Idol doing the song. And, you know, it's just, you know. Imagine her just shouting, blow, big man, blow.
It's just one of those things. Well, it's like when you hear about that, like, Kiss recorded a song with Bob Dylan, and you just kind of go, well, I guess, you know, go figure.
Clarence got to do something.
Yeah,
Bruce isn't using him right now.
Did you say that she put out her record today on Monday?
She put out her record today.
Because that never happens.
No, and I was talking to, for a story that's going to be coming out Sunday, Sally Ford and her band, The Sound Outside. I was talking to her, and their record was supposed to come out tomorrow, and it got moved up to today. And she said that what she was told was everybody who had records coming out tomorrow, they moved them up to a day because retailers wanted to be able to stock everything at the same time that they were stocking the Lady Gaga record.
Is that the first time in recent memory that somebody has put out a record not on a Tuesday? Why do they put everything out on a Tuesday anyway?
I don't have a good answer to that. And the thing is now, like release dates are so squishy now anyways. It's not like, you know, I remember distinctly skipping, you know, I think it was third period right before lunch to go to the record store to get the Use Your Illusions they came out. And then, you know, there was that period where record stores would stay open until midnight. And so you could get, you know, like at 12:01 on Tuesday morning, you could get things. And now it's kind of like, it's released on this Tuesday, but it's available on my website.
It's been streaming nonstop for a week and a half.
Yeah, I mean, you know, NPR regularly, if there's a big record, NPR seems now to have its hands on it and streaming it a week beforehand. So it's a very squishy thing. But she had a Monday release date, so everything that was going to be released, you know, officially tomorrow came out today.
I mean, in a way, I almost have to hand it to her because it's just not unlike with Taylor Swift in that it's so difficult to get the national attention span to focus on any one thing for any period of time that I admire anybody who's able to do that, because it's
because you can't get Americans to agree. We were talking about this with the Debbie Boone song. You can't get Americans to agree on anything at all. But the idea that you can get them to look at this one bright, shiny object for about a week and a half at this point, I mean, that has to be at this time. And in 2011, that counts as a Herculean achievement. No. It really does.
When she came here last year, that was kind of the crux of the A&E story that I wrote, is there's so little shared culture anymore that, she is the one thing that has managed to, and she's leaked into all of these different things, including to the point where, it was in the Don't Ask, Don't Tell run-up where she was sending tweets to... in the direction of, I forget which politician it was, and his spokesperson had to say, I think it was Harry Reid. I think it was Harry Reid's spokesperson was like, Lady Gaga is not directing,
but how
not
great
directing
that she
policy.
Can do
yeah.
that,
It was both a comment on where we are with politics in this country and, that it is really just entertainment, and anybody might think that Lady Gaga is, and two, that she does actually have some reach that most people don't have anymore.
I think it would be I don't know, when I said I heard the Judas song and it was sort of, it was sort of immediately catchy but then ultimately kind of underwhelming. And I guess it's because even more than this was the case in the past, the music is just sort of an adjunct to, it's just one aspect of the sort of the Gaga show.
Right.
I think the very best thing that she could do at some point, because she is such a construct and she is so completely, if not prefabricated, just fabricated, I think the absolute best thing that she could do would really be to blow it up as big and as loud as she possibly can, and then just kind of fold her tent and vanish in the middle of the night. And nobody ever does that. I mean, nobody ever does the Salinger thing in music. I mean, we had Axl Rose who did it for however long. But I mean, really?
But even then he kept coming out.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like during this 10 years when they kept saying, Axl Rose hasn't been seen. And it's like he was always like playing in Brazil in front of 200,000 people. Yeah. And it was like, he's right there. Or, he would be like, he'd be going on stage, the Whiskey or something. But I mean, I think she won't, because there's just too much money at stake and there's too much whatever at stake. But I mean, somebody like Lady Gaga, who does sort of has kind of captured the cultural attention, the zeitgeist for the moment. If somebody like that would really have the sort of foresight and the sort of discipline to actually do that, to build it and then just completely deconstruct it and vanish in the blink of an eye, that's the only way that you could go out in a satisfactory fashion if you're her. One of the constant pop culture obsessions that I return to over and over and over again, and I am alone in this, by the way. This is like a thing, like this is the land where not even Chuck Klosterman dare tread. I am fascinated by and have been fascinated since it came out, which is now, 10, 12, 15 years ago, the Garth Brooks, Chris Gaines thing, which I thought, which is a thing that I mention and people kind of go, oh, yeah, where he was like the guy, he was the singer who had the thing. And I mean, if that had worked, the Chris Gaines deal is one of those things that if it had been successful, I mean, people would have hailed it as one of the most brilliant marketing concepts in the history of popular music. I mean, they would have. And that guy's already he's no slouch in the marketing and self-promotion department anyway. I mean, that guy is single-handedly revolutionized the way the country music is sold to people, but also came up with just a whole raft of marketing gimmicks and things that, had never been done, certainly in that genre of music. But the idea of creating just this whole false persona who... And the masterstroke of the Chris Gaines thing, in my opinion, was that he created this false persona who was already dead. That's the thing about Chris Gaines. It's like he didn't create this guy who was alive, although I think he did perform on SNL.
Yeah.
But I think the premise of it, I think the conceit was that Chris Gaines was actually dead and that the record that came out was his greatest hits record, because it was all Shades of Kiss. It was all supposed to be the soundtrack for this movie that he ended up never making because the record tanked so badly. And it was going to be the rise and fall and I think eventual assassination of a pop star. And that is that's the kind of thing that just isn't done enough. Just huge, grand, stupid, wonderful vision like that.
Todd Snyder has this hilarious story that I've seen him tell before live about how he got a call from Garth Brooks one day and explaining to him the Chris Gaines thing. And Todd goes, and I'm thinking to myself, what a stupid effing idea. And then he goes, but then Garth says, yeah, and I want to record your song, All Right Guy. And I was thinking, what a great effing idea.
An awesome idea.
And he goes, but there's this one line about pot, and I'm not sure it would really work. Can we change it? And Todd goes, I'm saying you can change the thing to a Christmas carol as long as you get the check in the mail.
I remember working at in a building, I guess I would have been in Salt Lake maybe when this came out, and there was a country station, there was a pop station, there was a rock station, there was whatever. But and the thing about that Chris Gaines record that was so great is because they positioned the whole thing as a greatest hits record for an artist whose career was already over, that then gave them carte blanche to make every track from a different genre, which meant that they could market singles to like every radio format that there was simultaneously. And I remember they were servicing, as they call it, they were servicing the country stations with like the sort of countrified Chris Gaines song at the same time that they were sending to the AC, to the Adult Contemporary station, that that thing he did that had the sample of Right Now by the Get Together by the Youngbloods. And I remember just being astounded at what a brilliant idea that was. That he was like, well, why should I just be a country star when I can actually send records to every format at once, and all the checks will come to the same address? And I mean, it's, you know, and it didn't work, but I mean, that is like, so when Lady Gaga does something like having Gagaville, which is the thing she's going to be putting on Facebook, which just sounds retarded. I mean, it just sounds so fundamentally ridiculous that you just kind of have to go like,
but that's kind of the point.
Well done. I mean, that's
the majority of what she does is fundamentally ridiculous when you look at it. You know, the New York Times feature on her yesterday had a rundown of photos from her House of Gaga design company. I mean, and the thing is, you know, and this is always what's interesting to watch with people who, and she doesn't do it in the ways that others have, but deal in somewhat in kind of a shock mentality, you know, especially fashion-wise. Okay, you've worn your meat dress, you've worn this. Like, at some point, she's actually going to have to skin Marilyn Manson and wear him for any of us to even blink an eye. And that's when you get into trouble in that genre, is it then it just gets ridiculous and people tune out and go find the next scary thing.
Right. And it is the constant, you know,
that's what you were talking about with the saw.
Yeah.
It just becomes this, you know, kind of this background noise.
There was a great Onion story actually a few years ago about I think this is after sort of the ascendance of Eminem as kind of the great boogeyman for the American suburban parent. And there was a great Onion story about I think the headline was Marilyn Manson now going door to door to try to shock people.
Yeah.
And it was like he had a checklist and he was, you know, would knock at the door and like, there's Marilyn Manson. Hello, suburban scum. And then he would just sit there and he would sodomize himself with a crucifix and then like, and then urinate like on a baby and then say, have I offended your suburban sensibilities? You know, with here in your tiny, cozy, upholstered coffin. You know, then he would check them off the list and he would go on to the next house. And that is, I mean, you know, and that is sort of the thing that, that's the deal with Lady Gaga for me, is that it, just as sort of a fan of just spectacle and marketing and the idea of how you get things over with the American public, just the idea of when she's going to sort of tip over, when her center of gravity is going to hit the wrong point and it's all going to sort of implode on her. We should take a moment and actually do some, news here. We got the top five coming up in a bit. We'll get to our killing recap and more at the news desk. Here is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
Well, let us start with our Obama Watch.
All right, here is your Obama Watch for Monday, right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
If you like Barack Obama versus more of the same. If you're not into Clinton, if you're not for McCain. But if you want a new direction and you're tired of the games, vote with me for Obama and be an agent of change.
Here is Don Taylor with your Obama Watch.
Now available on President Obama's 2012 re-election website, Made in the USA t-shirts, complete with a picture of the president and a copy of his long-form birth certificate.
That is awesome. Really?
Yes.
On his actual website. Like, it's not being sold by some
nope.
Merchandising
you
wing.
You had to see that coming.
The Obama campaign is giving them to anyone who donates at least $25 towards the president's re-election effort. A coffee mug will run you $15.
Here's the great thing about that. Here's the genius behind that, is that that will actually extract money from people like myself who would not normally have given money to him ever under any circumstances, just because, like, I don't think I've ever in my life donated to a political campaign or a movement or a candidate. But that's enough. That right there would get me to do it. because then just to have one of those around, I mean, if the, you know, if nothing else, just to irritate my in-laws, that is fantastic.
Yes. A substantial number of Americans, however, still harbor doubts about whether Obama was in fact born in Hawaii.
Wonderful.
Despite his decision to release his long form birth certificate.
This country.
One in five Americans say they still don't know enough to say for sure.
But that's probably true. Like, the question is probably, do you know enough to be for sure about anything?
Gravity.
One in five.
What
no.
about gravity? I don't know. I can't see it.
Excellent.
Another 13% answered the Gallup poll that Obama either definitely or probably wasn't born on domestic soil.
That is great. I can't wait for 2012, really, honestly, because we've got so much. We've got Newt, who's officially announced. We've got Tim Pawlenty, who's officially announced. Sarah Palin still hasn't. But I mean, it's like this is where just all of the cars are lining up into pole position. And the flag is about to come down. That is wonderful. You said it's mugs and it's also t-shirts.
$25 donation to the campaign will get you a t-shirt.
And the thing is, $25 is the perfect amount. That is because above that, that's when Americans start to sort of, you know, they start to have second thoughts about purchasing things like that. And that's less than you're going to pay for your average concert t-shirt, I would imagine. Wonderful.
Yes. Excellent. There you go. There's your Obama watch for Monday.
Barack Obama versus more. If you're not into Clinton, if you're not for McCain.
Boy, and it's funny how Donald Trump just completely vanished from our cultural consciousness.
Yeah.
That's a guy that we just put into some sort of a psychic penalty box, you know, like for the next 6 months or so.
He stays there. Should have gotten a game misconduct.
You're
a
not
while
running?
Ago.
You mean it was just all like some kind of a bid to get attention? I'm shocked.
I love the stories that treated that as if he ever was actually going to run.
Well, and apparently NBC actually just told him, I think the final straw was they just said that they would replace him on The Apprentice. And that is when he just kind of, you know, he kind of pulled the ripcord on the entire thing. So here is Don Taylor.
Well, speaking of the upcoming election, Tim Pawlenty is set to formally announce, he was going to announce today that he's running for president. He actually got a head start on it last night with a campaign commercial posted to YouTube. I have an excerpt from that here. This will be the first time I try to play audio from the new web laptop, so let's see if it works.
All right.
Podium with my campaign logo on it. I could have balloons. Red ones, white ones, and blue ones. I could pass out stickers and cupcakes. I could promise that we can eliminate a $14 trillion debt, create jobs for 10 million people, restructure Social Security and health care, all without making any tough decisions. Or I could try something different.
Oh, God, no.
I could just tell you the truth.
Ah,
the truth
burns.
Is, our country's in big trouble. We have far too much debt, too much government spending, and too few jobs. We need a president who understands that our problems are deep and who has the courage to face them. President Obama doesn't. I do. Tomorrow, my first campaign stop will be in Iowa. And that's where I'm going to begin a campaign that tells the American people the truth. I'm Tim Pawlenty, and I'm running for president of the United States.
Oh, man. The thing is, like, if you were just to take the last third of that, it's actually not too bad. It's the whole build-up with the cupcakes and the stickers, and then that thing about the where they just telegraph, like, the unsurprising punchline, like, a mile away.
The whole, and I'm running for president of the United States, is straight from the opponent in the American president.
Well,
it's just begging Barack Obama to give the big speech that says that I am.
And that line where he says, what's he? He has that line that sets up the reveal. I mean, ham-handedly so. But he says, you know, or I could do something really outrageous. Pause. I could tell the truth, which is, by the way, nearly verbatim a line from Primary Colors, you know, which is out now 15 years. So, I mean, it's not like Primary Colors invented that either. But I mean, it's like that sort of setup and reveal is just at this point is so that I can't believe that an ad like that is actually effective, even with people who are inclined to support him ideologically. I can't believe that an ad like that actually still packs any sort of punch.
I guess it is. I guess I haven't really followed him in the past, but I guess it's a big change of pays for him. Apparently, his previous campaigns have all been very frenetic.
Yeah.
So they describes it as Michael Bay-esque with just bombastic music and like, roar, and things are happening. And so,
no, he...
pandering to young people, quick cut.
No, exactly. As a politician, he is sort of... he has always struck me, and I don't know a lot about him, but he has always struck me as the political equivalent of one of those guys at those mega churches. You know, like, you know, for other reasons, but a guy like Tag Haggard, whose whole thing was like, you know, being very, very, as you said, frenetic and very manic, and a lot of like high production quality, and a lot of like, you know, sort of the Howard Dean thing of embracing the internet and really and constantly updating his website with things, and really like embrace grassroots, fundraising through email outreach and all of that, and again having a really high energy public persona, and his stump speeches were always really adrenalized, and I think probably that does remind people a little bit too much of Howard Dean at this point, and that just he is
bring it down, Tim,
that's the deal, because it's like, especially with Obama now, who doesn't have to do that. Obama can actually now, Obama is in the enviable position of having just what everybody strives for, but nobody's really sure how to attain, which is the always shrouded in mystique but eminently valuable gravitas. And it's like, if you can get that, but it's like nobody really knows how to get it. It's the thing you just sort of stumble into. And so now that Obama has, you know, obviously got the momentum with him because of the Bin Laden thing and nothing else, all he has to do is like nothing. I mean, really, I mean, at this point, I think all Obama would have to do is just not screw up between now and the general election, and the momentum is all his. I mean, he has...
Catching some more pirates might be good for him.
Sure,
too.
Pirates, yeah.
Maybe just fist fight ninjas at this point. I mean, really, what else is there left?
Maybe re-imprison Zod.
I mean, all he has to do...
Dragons.
Dragons.
He just has to kind of go, oh yeah, Bin Laden, that was me.
Yeah.
That's really all he has to say.
It's, well, you know, it's like, to make a musical comparison, when Led Zeppelin played at the O2 Arena a couple years ago, a lot of bands that are out, that get to be a certain age, a lot of, you know, like you wrote the Rolling Stones or the Who or, you know, any band that is sort of that era, they all kind of fall into the same trap in my experience, which is that they play way too quickly to try to compensate for energy or for the, you know, the sort of visceral punch that they may have lost with age. So as a result, you go to see the Rolling Stones and they're playing Gimme Shelter at triple time, and it just, you know, and it loses all of its weight, it loses all of its magic. And I saw the Who do the same thing, where they would get up there to play, you know, like Pinball Wizard or something, you know, whatever, you know, behind Blue Eyes, and they're just rushing through it to try to give it this sort of false sense of energy, and it never really works. When Zeppelin played at O2 Arena, they did something really, really smart, where they slowed everything down like 30%. And so what you instead had is, instead of like it looking like a bunch of old guys who were trying to seem young and punchy and energetic, it was just like waves of like heavy metal molten doom, like pooling at your feet. It was like every note was like, and it would just be like this long guitar chord ringing out, and just like this sludgy rock and roll apocalypse just sort of like washing over you really slowly. And that is, and that, there's a certain amount of confidence, I think, required to do that. And I think that is what Obama can do, is he can just stop and just let the momentum just sort of ring out. And so I think it's a mistake for a guy like Tim Pawlenty to not really be aggressive. We have
audio from his the rally in Iowa this morning when he officially announced his presidential whatever you call it.
3 years into his term, we're no longer just running out of money. We're running out of time. It's time for new leadership. It's time for a new approach.
The thunder's a nice touch.
Where was this at?
Iowa.
This was in Iowa, yeah.
Pawlenty accused President Obama of doing little to solve America's fiscal crisis.
It won't get fixed if we keep going down the same path. If we want a new and better direction...
Oh, come on!
We're going to need a new and better president.
See, they're onto it now.
Yeah.
They've started to avoid the new direction thing. Bastards. Who was it that was avoiding New Direction last hour? Oh, it was the guy from Salt Lake with the strip clubs.
I think as soon as on Glee that they named their Glee club New Directions, I think you realized people were onto it.
Now is that a thing that is that a joke on Glee? Because I don't really watch Glee.
I don't think they have ever mentioned it as a joke. They have never acknowledged it as a joke.
They just lay it in there, and if you get it, you get it, and if you don't, you don't.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
Pawlenty claimed President Obama's policies have failed and that America's fiscal situation is in big trouble.
What is this cut?
Three. Pawlenty, three.
It won't get fixed if we keep going down the same path.
Four.
No. If we want a new and better direction, we're going to need it.
Well, okay, you already said that.
Well, there you go. All right. Here is Don Taylor. Let's do like one more here and we'll take a break.
Okay.
Come back on the other side. We've got our killing recap to do, also our top five and
now,
so forth.
Do you want me to hold this till right before?
No, let's
the
do that
five?
Now. Okay. We'll set it up.
Okay. We'll do our snuff watch.
All right. Here's your snuff watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson radio program. Here's Don Taylor with your snuff watch.
The man who composed the pop hit You Light Up My Life ended his own life on Sunday, New York police said. Joseph Brooks, 73, was facing charges on 11 alleged rapes and sexual assaults, according to New York Police Deputy Commissioner Paul Brown.
You don't really picture that guy raping you.
Not the guy who would write that song.
No.
No. The Oscar-winning songwriter was found dead on a couch in his Manhattan home by a friend with whom he was supposed to have lunch at 12:30 p.m. on Sunday. A plastic dry-cleaning bag and a towel were wrapped around his head with a tube connected to a helium tank attached. A suicide note was found nearby. Brooks' son, Nicholas Brooks, was charged in January with the murder of his ex-girlfriend, according to Manhattan District Attorney's Office. The bruised body of swimsuit designer Sylvie Cachet, 33, was found at a New York hotel last December. So apparently the family is just all effed up. The song, which was written as the title track for a movie, won an Oscar, a Golden Globe, and a Grammy for Brooks. Debbie Boone's recording of You Light Up My Life was the number one song of 1977 on the Billboard pop chart.
Now, did you say that it was the title track?
Well, yeah, they call it the title track. It was actually the...
But was there a movie? Was there a movie called You Light Up My Life?
Yes, yes.
I had no idea, until this moment, that it was a movie.
What was her name? Dee Dee...
Music editor Ryan White?
Dee Dee Khan.
No idea.
Her name was Dee Dee Khan. She played a woman who wanted to be a famous singer, but she was mostly just getting work doing jingles and backup singing work. And she was also a songwriter. And then finally,
someone
encourages her to like record her song, You Light Up My Life, and she does. And she finally becomes a star.
So like a Star is Born kind of a thing? Or
kind of, yeah. Yeah, you know. The only thing I remember about that movie is that there's the scene where, and I don't know why I even remember this, but there's a scene that she gets fired from a job because she's singing a jingle for an egg company. And the jingle is all about how their eggs will make your scrambled eggs fluffier. And she points out to them that, you know, the song doesn't make any sense because it's actually the milk you add to the eggs that makes them fluffy. And then she gets fired. That's literally the only thing. Well, okay,
you have thrown away large sections of your life, by the way.
Of my brain. There are big chunks of my
brain.
Have
no illusions about that.
That are devoted to crap like that.
Yes.
Also, I remember her name is Dee Dee Khan.
Do you know CPR?
No.
Okay.
I don't know. I couldn't name all the presidents or the capitals of the states, but I know that.
I think until you read this story, I didn't know. I just assumed it was just some treacle that a guy like churned out and that went right to.
No,
that
there,
went
there
right to Debbie.
Movie.
Debbie Boone probably passing through her father's liver-spotted hands, and that. So this is the conversation we were having earlier off the air. That we can never find any unanimity in this country about anything ever at all under any circumstances. I mean, it really takes like national tragedies to bring us together. Except like with this, where like we all look at each other and go, "That's a great song. That's the best song out right now. There's no better song in the country than that one." We can all
relate to that,
and everybody kind of goes, "Yeah, that's a great song. There's nothing I'd rather listen to." For 9 weeks, that song was number one.
Yeah. Oh, I remember one other thing about "You Light Up My Life." Her best friend was played by Melanie Mayron.
Really?
Yes.
A 30-something fame.
Yes.
I love Melanie Mayron.
I do too.
Melanie Mayron, who played crazy spinster Melissa on 30-something.
Indeed.
Yeah, the Sarah Dillon of her day. really? I had no idea.
Yeah.
I wonder if it is worth. Here's the thing: is it worth watching? Do you suppose it's like a time capsule?
It's worth watching in that if you get any pleasure out of watching these sort of lifetime movies about, you know, women finding themselves and overcoming really lame obstacles.
That is its own genre, isn't it? The women overcoming lame obstacles, that is on the same channel as women trying to escape their troubled pasts by moving to a quirky town and becoming a waitress. I wonder if there's... I actually reached just now for the computer to play part of You Light Up My Life, and I was literally going to say, for anyone who doesn't know the song, but I wonder if that is... Because here's the thing about You Light Up My Life.
I could probably sing most of it from memory, and I haven't heard it in maybe 30 years.
And that was going to be my thing is, like, do you assume, as I do, that probably everyone over the age of, like, 18 probably knows that song? I mean, that it's just part of the cultural coding. It's part of, and yet, if that is true, and it may not be, but if almost everyone, like, in the country knows that song, you have to ask yourself how that's possible, because no one, and I mean no freaking buddy plays that song. There's no K103. There's no Music of Your Life station that's probably playing it. I can't imagine anyone plays You Light Up Your Life, and yet we all know it.
Yeah. It can't be wrong, 'cause it feels so right.
Please don't do that.
'Cause you light up my life.
The thing about Debbie Boone, too, is I remember nothing about her. Like, in my mind's eye, she looks like Amy Carter, but that's probably not accurate. I think that's just all the 70s chicks looked like Gloria Steinem.
Yeah, that's kind of all she did. Was You Light Up My Life.
No, because we weren't going to let her just do anything else.
That was it.
I have another single. No! You know, and we all just,
It's like Maureen McGovern. She does The Morning After for Poseidon Adventure. That's it. Never again. Nothing else.
See, when everybody says Maureen McGovern, I think of What's Her Name for the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, no. That was Maureen McCormick.
Maureen McCormick.
Mm. So. Again, don't know the title. Don't know the capitals of the states.
Is that
there must be a morning after if we can make it through the night. Yes.
You got a problem, Ryan White?
Right before, exactly that. And that was the song right before the entire boat flipped upside down and people started, like, crashing through the skylight.
All right. I don't remember that song as, but I must have weird, it's not that I have holes in my memory. I have, like, I am missing connectors because I don't remember that song as being from Poseidon Adventure.
Oh, yeah. No, it is.
Did Irwin Allen Joints always have some sort of a hit single?
I don't know. I do know that from Poseidon Adventure. In fact, they actually had Maureen McCormick doing the song. She's actually on stage. It's New Year's Eve. Everyone's dancing. She's on stage with the band. She's singing that song, and that's when the wave comes.
Interesting. All right. So, all right. And the other thing about You Light Up My Life is it's hard to imagine with songs like that, and I think about this sometimes. It's hard to imagine a guy writing that song because you just sort of assume it's just like this thing you've never known a world without. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, the idea of somebody sitting in a writing Stairway to Heaven or whatever. Like, you just sort of, you know, like, you don't really think that songs like that are written by people. They just are sort of there.
Especially probably extremely rapey people.
Yeah. Yes. That too. I mean, it's, you know, I mean.
It'd be especially creepy if he was, like, singing it, you know.
No, let's not. Yeah, right. No, I don't know.
Sorry. That was his signature, as we would say on CSI.
Well, so I guess we should note, by the way, that these were allegations. He had not yet faced trial.
Right.
But they were claiming that he would sort of, he's like, hey, you want to be an actress, huh? I mean, one of them Academy Awards, which is true. Why don't you come on up and I'll give you some, give you some lessons. And then, then it would all go sort of gropey after that. But, you know, that's. And plus, I think he'd had, like, a stroke or something, too.
And so he was 73.
Yeah, and so he kind of schlepped around just, like, looking like a weird bad marionette of himself. It's all very weird.
Yeah.
All right. So that guy's dead. But before we close out the Snuffwatch, I should say that his life has meaning if for no other reason than this. So he was the source of today's top five challenge. So then I said, you got to put together by 3 o'clock, like, a top five based on this sort of song. And so how would we define You Light Up My Life?
I would say overly sincere, popular at the time, but now cringe-inducing.
Is that cringe-inducing because of its popularity, because it was so overplayed, or is it cringe-inducing? Was it always cringe-inducing, and it just took a little while, like a sort of a bad candy, to sort of realize that,
maybe,
like, this
yeah.
doesn't taste very
I think
good.
In cringe-inducing because it was just always a bad song, but we were just too naive and stupid or coked up or whatever at the time to realize it.
Was this what year would this have been?
This was 77?
Yeah, 77. So is this one of those things where it's like the country was just, like, so wrecked from just, like, a long weekend of, like, Watergate and the energy crisis and blow and Studio 54
well,
and, like,
70s were,
chlamydia?
The 70s were there was some brilliance in music, but, like, a good 90% of it was just dreck.
But you know what I mean? It's like... Like, do you ever have, like, those that, like, and we've all had these moments where you're exhausted or you're feeling especially emotional or something because you've had maybe, like, a breakup with somebody. And it's like you get in the car and you hear, like, an Anne Murray song and then you're just sniffling to yourself like an idiot, you know, because mm-hmm. it's like you're in the right mood where it's like, it's like a warm bath, a warm salve, just sort of,
You know, so you're saying that as a nation, we were all collectively just hiding in our beds eating Oreos?
Or yeah, we're just, you know, it's like one of those Sunday morning coming down things. Like, it, but in real, where you're just sitting there on the porch, just like headache and just, you know, and sore and just, you know, the sun's too bright and it's, you know. And
those are the moments where I'm likely to be somewhat sympathetic towards modern country, small town. Like, you know, when you just reach the end of your rope and it's
right.
Like, oh, well, it's so nice to be from a place with one barn and a sheep and that's all there is.
And you hear it and you go, this makes sense. I can understand the appeal.
There are
here.
Values there. It's in no way cliched.
So maybe so it was sort of like it was a musical bosom to which our heads were being held, you know. It was a song. You know what it was? It was a musical friend to hold your hair while you vomited. It really wasn't that. I'm stretching there. Well, this, I mean, because that would also explain the Carpenters, right?
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I don't dislike the Carpenters like... I mean,
I do.
I'm sort of... Really?
Oh, yeah. We can talk about that next week.
No. We're going to talk about that now. No, seriously. So now, I'm not saying you're indifferent to the Carpenters. You're not saying that. You actually are...
No.
You dislike the Carpenters.
So we can talk about this next week. My parents... Not a huge music collection. One of them was a Carpenters record and just an awful babysitter that played awful Carpenters song over and over and over again. It was that Top of the World thing. I can't get past Top of the World.
All right. Okay.
Which is a truly objectionable, awful, horrible, stupid song.
Well, they did make some terrible music. I would never deny that. I mean, there were bad, bad Carpenters records. But okay.
Like it's personal.
All right. Okay. But you recognize, and I'm not saying it's invalid. But I'm saying you recognize that it comes from maybe a skewed. There
yes.
are external factors.
I will wholeheartedly admit that it is it is biased and all of those other things that
right.
are in no way anybody else's hangups but mine.
That and the fact that that Karen Carpenter routinely beat John Bonham for best drummer in the Playboy music poll every year.
Ooh.
So I'm just saying. All right. There you go. There's
Could've
your
been hope for you, Meg.
Sure. There's your snuff watch. By the way, was it you on Friday that was having the weird, or was it Jimmy? Somebody was having like a weird allergy. Was it you that was having an allergy respiratory thing?
No, that wasn't me. So
maybe it was Jim I was talking about that. I actually just, because just now, actually, during one of the breaks, I actually had to duck out into the bathroom and get myself a tissue. Mm-hmm. So I was watching the Weather Channel this weekend, which is a thing I don't do that often. Because, first of all, I associate the Weather Channel, I mean, not that I avoid it for this reason, but I associate the Weather Channel with my dad. Because for some reason, if there was no hee-haw marathon or something on, if Hogan's Heroes couldn't be found, my dad would just sit there and he would just sit in his chair just like blitzed on Meisterbrow watching the Weather Channel for hours. For hours and hours he would sit there and watch the Weather Channel. I mean, like over and over, just like, and the thing is, it's like watching that Northwest News Channel or whatever. It's like there's only like 12 minutes of content there and then they just like loop it. So so as a result, maybe I've just burned out on the Weather Channel early. But I was watching the Weather Channel actually via their app, and they said that this is I guess it was Jim I was talking about this, but they said that this is actually the worst pollen and related allergy season since 1962.
Awesome.
And that the only, which is a thing that I thought I left behind when I hit like adulthood. Like I didn't think that was a thing that was going to bother me anymore because I more or less, I had that a lot when I was growing up, like, you know, just like a lot of the ragweed and whatever. And we are actually the second worst state in the nation for that right now. We are beaten, if that's the word you want to use, only by North Carolina. So.
Well, one of these, unless I get the Claritin and start taking it every single day right now, there will be a day when I will go home and. All of the cottonwood trees in my neighborhood will have just dumped just snow drifts of crap in the gutters of my apartment complex, and I will come in going, oh, hi, Rick, how you doing?
And that's my thing, too. Yeah, you get the glork factor going on in your head. And then it's
so
like,
far, so good, but there will come that day when I'll go home and go, oh, God, no, cottonwood season.
Yeah. So it's not your imagination. It is, in fact, the worst allergy season probably in most of our lives in one of the worst places in the country. And then there's like 15 different people like, my dad also watches the Weather Channel for hours on end. Keelan, there's an age where all you start to care about are goddamn weather and patterns. I don't know. It was like we would, like, whenever we would, like, have to travel, like, with his goddamn Knights of Columbus shenanigans, we would, like, go to some horrible hotel. And my dad's favorite thing to do, I think in retrospect, he just didn't want to be seen with us publicly, maybe, or just wanted to avoid spending money on us. his favorite pastime in a hotel was just to sit there and read the Yellow Pages. And it's like and literally just sitting there just reading, and he would and I would say, like, can't we go out and do something? And he would reply with this weird sort of this non sequitur response that I guess kind of makes sense in a sort of Zen koan kind of way if you don't really think about it, where he would just say, well, you know, you can learn a lot about a town by reading their Yellow Pages. And then he would just go back to, and it's like, there's no texture, there's no surface there to grab as a kid. Like, you can't really respond to that. So, anyway, did I say we were going to break?
You did say that.
Do we need to break? Does anyone need to break?
I'm good.
I'm okay.
All right. Well, should we do killing first, top five, second?
Yes.
All right. Have you given me the top five? Do you have it prepared?
I have it right here. I'll play
with the music and the everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've got it.
That's good
to
because we're going to need a little bit of a pick me up after this. By the way, before we do any of this, what's coming up in the Oregonian, Mr. Ryan White?
Sunday we'll have a big feature on Sally Ford and her new record.
So tell me a little bit about her, because you mentioned that we mentioned her earlier this hour because she was going to be maybe moving her record up because of the Lady Gaga thing. But I don't really know much about Sally Ford.
I first came upon it like about a year and a half ago. Three or four people who I really trust, like, hey, you got to go check out this woman, Sally Ford, and her band. And they were playing Mississippi Studios, and it was this, you know, they were last on a bill of I don't even remember who was on it. I just remember being very bored throughout most of the bill. And then she came on. I think she's 24 now, 25, and she just, you know, blew us away. She's got this really cool voice. It's kind of like a little bit Wanda Jackson, a little bit, you can go into a lot. You can pull a lot of classic female singers and use them to describe her voice, but it's still her and it's original. And, you know, she got this really good band behind her now. And what's going to be interesting to watch with them coming up the next year or so, the record is out on Partisan Records, which is DeLorean's label, Deertick's label, back in New York. And I was talking actually to their manager earlier this week. You can put them on almost any kind of bill. You could put them on a country bill. You could put them on a rockabilly bill. You could put them on a straight rock bill. They've opened for Mavis Staples. They've opened for Tao and Mira. They're opening a Decemberist show. The Avett Brothers have had them open numerous shows of theirs, including some big New Year's Eve shows a year or so ago. She's gotten to know Seth Avett through a mutual friend who also lives here. It's this combination of kind of indie rockabilly, some straight rock songs. They've got some, you know, some real dramatic touches. She's done in the past a couple of really great Tom Waits covers live. And so, there's just, you know, just all kinds of potential. And she really, it's awesome because in person she's this really kind of shy, awkward person to sit down and to chat with. And she'll get on record and she'll sing like, you know, I got a pistol in my pocket and I sure do shoot it well. And I told her, like, you know, in real life, I would never believe that you had a pistol in your pocket. But when you sing it, I'm like, I think she's probably got a pistol in her pocket and she will use it.
And is she from, she's from here?
She's from Asheville, North Carolina originally. She's lived here for about 4 or 5 years now.
And it's her and a band?
Yeah. The Sound Outside is the band. And they're in that really kind of interesting spot for a band where, you know, it was a couple of weeks ago they went and they opened at the Troubadour and then coming up the coast for Tao and Mira, and then they were playing a lunchtime set out in front of the PSU Student Union when they got back here, you know, to just the passersby. It was funny because I walked over there and you could tell, like, the music professors, because they would stop and, like, intently stare at one instrument for about 5 minutes and then either shake their head or nod and walk on. And so, you know, they've upgraded now to a touring van that has air conditioning. They're excited about that. They have a tour rider that includes a pack of gum, and sometimes the pack of gum is the only thing that they get.
Excellent.
So,
this is not her first
full-length.
Her first full-length
album. There's an EP that was, they did it all, and like the early ones, you know, it was, you know, them and their friends, like, folding the CD covers and hand-printing them and that kind of stuff.
Bands today, I mean, it's not like it's ever been easy to be a musician, and it was always a bit of a long shot that you were going to, you know, become like the next big thing or whatever. But I really have to say I admire and yet feel a sort of proxy fear for anybody who gets into the music industry now with, you know, with goals or hopes of really making an impact or even making a good living or a decent living at it.
Yeah.
Because it's just, you know, just talking about, you know, playing at the Troubadour and then coming up and then just sitting there kind of playing for anybody who happens to walk by.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's sort of a microcosm for the music industry.
You've got to be willing to do a lot. I mean, it was a year and a half ago when I talked to her and they were just starting to, you know, really create some buzz. And now, I mean, their release show, they're doing 2 nights at the Doug Fir next Friday and Saturday, the 2nd and the 3rd, or the 3rd and the 4th. I forget which it is, but it's next weekend at the, you know, so they're doing two nights. They pack every place that they play around here. So a year and a half ago, her goal for 2010 was, I want to be able to quit my job. She was working as a waitress at a Thai place over on Hawthorne. Right. And so, you know, one of the first things I asked her when we sat down 2 weeks ago is, so did you get to quit your job yet? She's like, oh, yeah, no, I quit my job. Now I just babysit for kids with weird names. So.
Excellent. Sally Ford, and the record is out today?
Yeah, today. It's called Dirty Radio.
Dirty Radio. Awesome. All right. And I have to say that I think I mentioned the last time you were here that Rafael Sadiq record has not really been off. It's just been – actually, it was – because
love that record.
And they were streaming it on NPR, so it was actually just that, and then it was that and the Book of Mormon soundtrack just going like back to back to back to back to back. So it's been really – it's been a glorious month for my wife in terms of her musical discovery. All right. Let's see. Without further – oh, no. Sorry. All right. I don't know why that happened.
She doesn't sound like her. That would be the one classic female singer that I would not.
Let's see. Where did I put the who's it with them? All right. We will need the top five as a bit of a pick-me-up after our discussion of last night's episode of The Killing. I will say that our recap of The Killing, as well as the upcoming top five, brought to you by Squires Electric. This seems like strangely dark music for this, but I will just say that if you are...
if you're in danger of electrocuting yourself.
If you need to electrocute somebody.
Yeah, I was going to say, if if you're building yourself some sort of an imprisoning device in your basement and you're just not quite sure of the voltage, because, you know, a little too much, and then it's like, then you got a whole separate problem. You can talk to Squires Electric at facebook.com/SquiresElectric or SquiresElectric.com. You can also call them. It's 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors.
Is there such a thing as criminal electrician confidentiality?
I think that maybe, I think maybe, maybe if this is the music that accompanies the electrical visit to your house, you have larger issues. Facebook.com/SquiresElectric or SquiresElectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier and they will get it done right. Get it done right the first time. They are proud sponsors of this, the Rick Emerson Radio Program, and also of Legion of News and of Science on the March during that program. Last night, The Killing, Episode 9, Season 1. So here's what I put on, and by the way, there'll be spoilers, lol, here, so it's like if you don't want to be, you know, because I know, like, Cheryl, I think, has not yet seen it last night, and Sarah is a few episodes back, and we were talking about this morning. I put this on Twitter last night right as the show ended, right as I got done watching it at, like, I don't know, like 1 a.m., and I just wrote, Jesus God, the final 4 minutes of tonight's Killing episode are some of the most disturbing television I've seen in quite some time. I can't wash off the ick, which is really... And I it takes a lot. And it wasn't really explicit in the accepted sense. It wasn't graphic or bloody or whatever. But it's that thing where it's like it's just like a thing that gets into your head and just lodges there like some sort of horrible visual tick. And it takes a lot to really disturb me, to unnerve me. And I mean, this show is so creepy and so filled with dread. I don't mean this show. I mean the Killing. And last night's episode was really. It was really off the charts unsettling to me. I was very, very, like, upset by the end of the whole thing.
And I think it was so emotionally upsetting because we've seen for several episodes that this was quite likely where a large portion of the plot, where a certain segment of the plot was headed. But you kept thinking, oh, good. But then we cut that off. It was like, okay, that's not going to happen. Good. Whew. And then you keep watching. You're in a situation where there's a guy that you are fairly sure... is not guilty of the murder.
Right.
We don't know for sure yet, but it's about a good...
You certainly don't know he's guilty.
You don't know he's guilty, and it's pretty much... You're pretty sure as a TV watcher that he's not. But the same thing is that he's in this situation where everyone thinks he is, and you kind of thought, you know, you've kind of thought that this was a distinct possibility that this would happen, but I think on some level you think, no, they won't go there.
Right.
They're not going to go there. This, you know, we care too much about these characters... They're not going to have this one good man do this horrible thing to this other good man.
And he's made such a conscious effort to reform himself and to no longer be violent and to no longer whatever. And then you had the whole thing of like, well, okay, is it going to be Michelle Forbes who finally... And they did a nice fake out on us there of like, well, she'll be the one who's sort of the Lady Macbeth. And, you know, and it's...
And I still believe that there is something she knows.
Something else coming.
That she's not... she's not talking about. She's somehow complicit in this, but hasn't said anything.
And then that whole thing where she just gives him this, you know, where she like kind of turns on Stan. And she's when the teacher doesn't get arrested, and she said like it's your fault, like you let him go, you know, you had him and didn't. And it's like, and you know, and you just see him just then irrevocably being put onto this path of doing this horrible thing, and it's like you just, you know, and.
And I am still betting that the murderer is his little buddy.
Oh my God!
Particularly after him like dancing around and punching the rock.
Well, that was the moment that I just,
because he's crazy.
That was the moment where it's like the train just left the rails for me. Was that sequence where Stan is like beating the teacher to death, and like his pal is like miming it on this like boulder behind him. And that was the creepy thing, is like he wasn't just like punching a rock like, well, I got all this aggression. He was like actually like miming, he was like mimicking the actual beating of the teacher, but like with this really like horrible, like ebullient, like strangely, like crazily joyous energy. Yeah. It was so unbelievably disturbing. That was actually the sequence that I was referring to when I put that post up last night on Twitter. I mean, I don't even, just thinking about it, just as you would say, skeeves me out. It just creeps me out, especially because it seemed, and maybe this is just me, but it seemed like weirdly like sexual in some strange way. In this sense, I don't, you've seen it in The Company of Men,
yeah,
where there's the Aaron Eckhart character, and then there's whoever, the little wormy guy, and. You see that dynamic a lot in fiction, where there is the, sometimes older, but there is the stronger, more alpha, charismatic male, who often is a sort of proxy vent or a vicarious outlet for a lot of like frustrations that the kind of the beta male, the easily influenced male has, and you see that dynamic with like a Leopold and Loeb kind of a thing, or like the guys in Rope, and where one of them is kind of pushing the other into something because sort of the lesser male is just so entranced and intoxicated by this sort of power, this energy, and it does have this almost weird like homoeroticism to it, but just kind of turned in on itself in this horrible way, and that was kind of what I saw last night. I mean,
well, there was also that creepy, creepy scene where they were on a moving job, and what is his name? The father,
Stan, yeah.
And he's helping the little girl with her bike,
right?
And the other guy is watching. And I think there's at one point where I think that, on the one hand, it's like, I'm not sure you're supposed to believe, I think, that he's looking at Stan and thinking, you know, how sad for him. He lost his daughter, and now he's not. But the thing is, the intensity with which he's watching him with the daughter was so creepy.
And it was like, well, and what is he thinking at that moment? Like, is he, because the obvious, but I think wrong assumption is that, well, he has some weird untoward feelings to the little girl. But I think it's that he has, like, this overwhelming desire to be Stan. And to have that kind of, you know, he wants to be a father, and he wants to be a dad, and he wants to,
or something, or he just has some kind, or there's something. There's something wrong with that guy. My money is on him.
I will say that the one thing that I found the most horrifying, and this is maybe a thing that I think you might, and maybe I'm seeing something that's not there, but. Going back to what's his name, and for some reason I cannot remember his name, but the crazy sidekick guy who we're sure is guilty of something.
Holden?
No. Reason that I find that so unbelievably disturbing is the way, and maybe this is just one of many interpretations, but the way they'd set the whole thing up. Even this music is freaking me out now. Where as Stan is like putting the beat down on the teacher, I think we can say with certainty he's probably dead at this point. I mean, we didn't see him die, but I mean,
yeah, I don't think we can assume anything from the show's cliffhangers anymore.
But as the guy's watching him and he's miming the beating, it almost seemed like they were framing that shot. It was like the guy was watching Stan the way that other guys watch porn, you know, where it's like he's watching this action and this thing happen. Well, and it's like he's miming it with his own actions, he, the viewer at home.
He was creepily worked up about it. Stan was beating on the guy, and he was dancing around in this sort of pro-fighter rope-a-dope thing in the background, sort of squealing with delight. It was, you know, his energy level was sort of insanely out of control.
Well, and there's that moment where he comes in and he tries to sort of Stan is like, you know, is beating the teacher, you know, almost to death or maybe to death. And he comes over and he tries to sort of, you know, get intervene. And it looks like he's trying to sort of stop it, to break it up. And Stan kind of roughly pushes him away. But then what you realize is, like, he just kind of wanted in on the action.
Yeah,
like, it was sort of a my turn. Like,
yeah.
Like an I got next kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was...
No,
that,
there was almost a gang rape element to it.
I think what I'm talking about, where it's like that weird, horrible... You know, like you'll hear psychologists talk about that sort of mentality, where it is this like this awful criminal intoxication that happens. It was so deeply unnerving. And again, if anybody is hearing a description, it's a fantastic show, and not nearly as overtly violent as we're making it sound. But it's a show that really does like get under your skin. I mean, it's. And I have no idea how any of it's going to end, how any of it is going to unfold. I mean, I have no idea whatsoever. I couldn't predict at all how anything is going to turn out. And we've only got, 10, 11, 12, we got 4 episodes left. So.
And I tell you, I love the character of Lyndon, but she's got to stop, like, making promises she can't keep.
Yeah.
This is, like, the second time she's said something to somebody during the course of this investigation that turned out not to be true.
It'll be over tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. I have to say that with every episode, though, I really do like Holden, or Holder. I think that guy is great. I think he's awesome. I mean, I think that there's so much more depth and texture and layering to that character than initially would have seemed. Because you see it in energy, he is. It's kind of like the Brad Pitt Morgan Freeman thing in Seven, where he's just a dirtbag new guy. But you know, I think he does a great job of indicating stuff below the surface, you know?
This music is just so upsetting.
It's serious. I'm so unnerved. This is why I decided to put the top 5 after this. All right. So let's just all... let's just do this. Before we do anything else, let's just... Jesus. Oh, and then tonight's the season finale of House. La-da-da-ba-ba-ba.
Thank God.
Where it's like House goes where no one ever thought he would.
Whatever.
The most shocking something ever,
yeah.
Or, you know, the one...
You've seen House Nuts before, but not like this.
All right. The one promise he never thought he'd blah, blah, blah. Okay.
His friendships are on the line.
3, 2, 1, fire.
I advised Greg that we were running ever so slightly late. Counting's the best thing to do.
Counting is happy. I'm not sure we have a lot to say about most of these songs.
I don't know. I don't know what any of them are.
Okay.
So you'll have to give us the one line summary. These are the top 5 songs that
that we as a society, and by that I guess I mostly mean white people.
Just confirming what everyone suspects, Don.
Once embraced unironically, and now we look back on with embarrassment and cringe.
Okay.
Sort of like, you know, You Light Up My Life.
Long as it's finally out.
Well, let's face it. I mean, these are ridiculous white bread, you know, songs, mostly from the 70s. They're horrible.
Fair enough.
70s and 80s.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, with that, I give you the top 5.
Number 6, the honorable mention, would be Stevie Nicks and Kenny Loggins' Whenever I Call You Friend, which will be starting...
Oh, I'm sorry, that's me. I need to... Oh. Right over here. Yeah. This is where,
This is in the jungle.
Someone has learned all the wrong lessons from Brian Wilson. The new Fleet Foxes. This is a bad, bad song. The thing about Stevie Nicks, as much as I love her, she's a real studio whore, though. She'll record with anybody. I mean, she's done some really, really terrible projects.
The female Willie Nelson.
Yeah, that, I mean... Someday I'll bring in the song she did with Bret Michaels. Did this come out?
Memories. I don't know.
Why do you know every word to this?
I don't know, because I grew up listening to this stuff on, like, probably my little AM transistor radio. Or I don't know.
Is this what you listen to on the way to see The Damned?
Culturally, though, if you listened to pop radio, though, you know, at a certain point in your childhood, and people know that just who listen to regular radio, you hear the same songs over and over, particularly during the summer. everywhere you go, people will be playing the radio, and you would hear the same song.
Feel good hit of the summer. Really, she did a song with Bret Michaels?
Yeah, she did a song called
Lita Ford Not Available?
She did a song with Bret Michaels called Sometimes It's a Bitch.
Was it about CeCe DeVille?
No, it was, you know, because he has that whole thing. Because Bret Michaels, of course, being a poor man's Jon Bon Jovi, he's one of those guys that is from Pennsylvania, but he looks in the mirror and he sees a cowboy.
Yeah.
And so it's this sort of weird quasi-country song that, you know.
It might be because he's afraid to take his cowboy hat off.
Yeah, he couldn't get anybody to take him seriously when he was trying to, when he came out on stage at Clark County wearing a couple FM t-shirt. Okay, can we be done with this?
Okay, we can.
Good God Almighty, that's number. That's your honorable mention.
That's the honorable mention. Number five is Andy Gibb. I Just Want to Be Your Everything.
Wow, you weren't kidding.
This was 1977 as well.
Doesn't Andy Gibb qualify just on his own for this entire category?
I think so.
This was the same year as You Light Up My Life. You and me
been finding each other for so long. Looks like a Hardy Boy. And the feeling that I feel for you is more than stronger. Take it from me. If you give a little more than you're asking for, your love will turn the key. Darling, in mine. So glad I was only three.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't subjected to a lot of this the way that many people were.
Yeah,
this is really one of those moments where I'm glad my parents closed-mindedness in terms of music. Yet I know it. I don't know why. Where would I have heard this though? Why do I know this song? This is like when Eric Schneider was here and he was playing that song by the Moody Blues, that I Know You're Out There Somewhere song. And it's like, why do I know that? What radio station would have been playing I Know You're Out There by the Moody Blues? I can't imagine that I would have voluntarily just sat around and listened to this growing up. Once I achieved the age of reason, I would have turned off the radio. And yet, somehow...
Supermarkets.
It's in my head. It must
supermarkets.
Be. It's got to be that in, like, hold messages, you know, or, like,
yeah.
In the dentist's office.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Let me know when you're ready to move on.
You whenever. I mean...
Okay, so that was your Andy Gibb. Number four, I believe this would be? Yes. This would be Olivia Newton-John. Have You Never Been Mellow?
This is like the You Light Up My Life guy's final raping. It's the raping of our ears today.
This is her live, by the way, from Midnight Specials, 1975.
Really?
Yes.
Somewhere Lester Bangs is sleeping unrestfully.
This is a rhetorical question, right? Have you never been mellow?
I
mean, we're listening to you.
I don't even know what the song is about. That sentence doesn't make any sense.
Well, and even if it made sense, like, structurally, like, why would you bother to care about whether somebody has been mellow? Like, of all of the things, of all of the inquiries you could make of a fellow human.
I believe she actually stole it from a drug dealer she passed who was trying to move some quaaludes.
Mellowness is a state that doesn't really seem to, that seems like an unimportant gradient of the human emotional spectrum clarify.
Whoever it is she's singing to, she just wants them to slow down, she says.
Oh, so, this is her 59th Street Bridge song, is what you're saying.
She has some really cool jeans with, like, patchwork just down one leg.
I did find her really hot, though.
She has a beautiful, beautiful woman. Ooh, there's patchwork down at the bottom of her bell bottom.
I think she's actually wearing the same thing Andy Gibb was wearing in that last photo.
Okay.
You don't picture this kind of music coming from Australia.
No, not now.
I mean, you know, like I just sort of, maybe I...
Oh, there's a creepy 70s dirtbag playing flute.
By the way, no
song... Rob Schneider?
Nothing with a flute in it is good. Really, the flute is your biggest... That's your biggest tell, by the way, that something is terrible.
All right. Okay, so okay. Let's move on to that. So that was...
God Almighty.
Number three... on the list, Firefall, Just
Firefall.
Remember I Love You.
Oh, my God. When it all goes crazy and the thrill is gone,
days get rainy and the nights get long. I know this one, too. You get that feeling
you were born to. It's like I'm just listening to one of those long-form, like, you know, 20 hits by the original artist.
Yeah.
A band that sounds like it should
weird
not be
place to put a completely atonal guitar.
Seriously. Hold on, there's a little hint of dissonance. This band should not be called Firefall. That's a much too that's a much cooler name than this band deserves.
Hey.
Just remember I love you. It'll be all right.
I see that with that atonal chord, though, they're doing the jazz thing of just keep doing it and it becomes your technique.
Is it atonal or do they just not tune?
I don't know. It sounds like it's flat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, here comes the horn.
Attention, white people entering the room. The saxophone is completely... The saxophone is the Greek chorus. You know, it's... The saxophone is sort of like... It's like the theme... It's like the shark's theme in Jaws. It alerts you to the imminent presence of white people. Oh, my God. I am not under any illusion that I have perfect pitch, but I do believe that I have some kind of relative pitch, because when I hear instruments that are tuned ever so slightly flat, or if I hear someone sing, there's this part at the end of Bat Out of Hell, there's part at the end of For Crying Out Loud, where Meatloaf hits, and I know that in his day he was a greater, certainly powerful singer, but there's this moment at the end of For Crying Out Loud where Meatloaf hits a note that is just dead-ass flat, and it makes the ears crawl off the side of my head. I mean, it's excruciating. And that's kind of what that chord is doing right now.
I hate that guitar.
Guitar makes me sad and furious.
I've probably heard enough Firefall. Okay,
please make this go
Firefall
away.
Okay,
was that number one?
That was number two. No, that was number three. We got two more.
I hate you.
Two more.
Okay.
This was your
please do recap again the
this was your idea
the theme
songs that we as a collective society
of lame white people see. At first it sounded exclusionary, but now it's like
we're doing
a favor to other cultures by not lumping them into our sins.
That much like You Light Up My Life, we embraced unironically, and now we realize are horrible and they make us cringe. So number two is Melissa Manchester.
Oh my God,
Don't Cry Out Loud.
No.
Baby cried the day the circus came to town.
This song I remember playing out of my mother's heavy, like 400-pound, allegedly portable radio that she used to hear Paul Harvey and Farm Reports.
This could be the background music for the Killing segment.
While she danced without a net up on the wire. I know a lot about her, 'cause you see. Baby is an awful lot like me. Don't cry.
Oh my God.
Just keep it inside.
If anybody, perhaps in a younger generation, hears the phrase soft rock and doesn't know what that means, this is what soft rock was. Oh my God.
If you should fall, remember.
Now, who is she singing to here?
Some girl she knows that I guess is really depressed.
So her advice is to keep it pent up inside?
Yeah.
Shove everything into a black ball of hate.
Right.
Okay, so she's not singing to like a woman who... She's not singing to herself. It sounded for a minute like she lost her man to somebody,
no,
but maybe not.
No, she's singing to somebody named Baby, and she's using some kind of tortured circus metaphor.
The 70s were a time of circus metaphors.
As opposed to the non-tortured circus metaphor.
Oh, here we go. This is important.
But baby can't be broken.
No.
You see,
or backed into a corner.
She had the finest teacher.
That was me.
That was me. I told her, don't cry out loud.
Wait a minute. But so who's Baby?
I don't know.
Is she talking to the guy who is dumping Baby now? And she's like, aha, you think you're going to break her heart, but no, because I...
I think she's just, like, patting herself on the back for giving somebody advice.
Because she sounds real happy, but it seems to be working out for her really well.
Oh, here.
I feel like there should be a gong somewhere here soon.
Seriously. Oh, my God.
By the way, the YouTube video that accompanies this is just a slideshow of butterflies.
Of course.
I don't know why.
We'll play number one, and then we're going to end the show.
Okay, let's listen. Number one, because
God damn.
Because I'm building the crescendo of awfulness as we go along.
Let me guess. Starline Vocal Band.
No, no, no. Eric Carmen, All by Myself.
Oh, when I was young, I never needed anyone.
You know, it's especially painful coming from Eric Carmen, who was in the Raspberries.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't always suck.
I'm just going to choose to think that you said Eric Cartman, and I'm going to hear him in my head right now.
Living alone.
All right, then. I'm going to thank our guests, including Mr. Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian. Find him online at oregonlive.com/music. Aaron Duran, The Weekend Geek. Find him at geekinthecity.com. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, it's Dawn Taylor. She picked this song. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill. Executive producer Bruce Sagler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. So sorry.
I
see
just
tomorrow
feel
for
so bad for your new computer.
Recap of tonight's House season finale, and we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program coming up next.
Sometimes it feels so.
Enjoy your afternoon, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in. It is Monday, May 23rd, 2011. Welcome, new listeners, by the way. Thank you for spending your money to hear this. You paid for this segment.
Oh, and visit PolidoriChocolates.com.
Yes.
Help me earn a living so I won't sing to you anymore.
Yes, thank Dawn, won't you? Send her a little something. All right. Thank you. See you all tomorrow. You say, bye now.